Transportation Committee. And the first bill that we'll hear is House Bill 3530A, and we do have some amendments, but in an open 3530, isn't it? Open a public hearing on House Bill 3530A.
Okay. House Bill 3530, Madam Chair, members of the committee, takes an offense of improperly disposing of human waste if a person is operating or riding a motor vehicle, boat, or otherwise leaves a container of urine or other human waste on or beside the highway. It makes the fine, its punishment is a fine of $2,500 and requires the suspension of the commercial driver's license upon conviction. And we have three different sets of amendments that are being proposed to this bill. The dash three, which is having a packet, would require the suspension of a driver's license of anyone who is convicted of improperly disposing of human waste, regardless if they have a commercial driver's license or not.
The dash one?
That's the dash three amendment.
Mm-hmm.
The dash four amendment would require that the only punishment of this offense would be a maximum fine of $250. No suspension and decreases the fine. And then the dash five amendment would require ODOT to post signs giving notice of the penalties for improperly disposing of the human waste on all highway entrances as you enter into the state of Oregon and on all highway entrances to or exits from the city limits of the city with a population of at least 10,000. And it's specified that these fines will not be imposed until the signs are posted.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Do we know what the fiscal is for that amendment?
They do not have time to prepare fiscal.
Okay. I do want to say that our bill, our committee will be reopening because some bill from the House. So if we don't get it, Brady, Senator President told me that just we find something that really needs to be amended that you know, if you will approve it in that next hearing, if you hear the bill.
Session is now scheduled at 3 o'clock Monday, so it conflicts with committee time.
Well, it would have to be a different time,
mm-hmm.
and not Monday anyway,
oh.
because the bills aren't here.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question, though, and I don't know if you, who's supporting the bill? Are they here? Do you have any signed up? Doug, could you come up, Doug, Senator? Okay. What about my question, or a way to identify yourself?
Okay. Senator Shannon, member of the committee, Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer, Oregon Department of Transportation. I'd be glad to take your question.
Okay. What if your mother throws out her disposable diaper, she's riding in a car, and it says you're operating or riding in a motor vehicle, then and they stop, please stop her. And will she lose her driver's license if convicted?
Senator Shannon, I have not seen the amendment that extends this to everyone, but if I understood, I believe it was the Dash 3 amendment correctly, my understanding of this law would be yes. The answer would be yes to that question.
According to the Dash 3, if we adopt those?
Yes.
I need to look at that. Okay.
Chair Shannon, excuse me, I'm sorry. House Bill 3530 was amended to deal with, I think it says human waste, and that would count as human waste. Let me clear that up. That's under that category, it would be counted as human waste or considered as human waste.
So what does the dash 3 have to do? Because it says, as the bill already is written, a person commits the offense of improperly disposing if the person is operating or riding in a motor vehicle. It doesn't say commercial.
Yes. It does discuss on page 9 of the bill.
Oh, okay.
That if you are convicted, a person operating or riding a commercial motor vehicle when it comes to they lose their commercial driver's license.
Oh, that's why it was 16. Okay, right.
What line?
The doctor would say anyone who does this to them.
Right.
But not so discriminated.
Right. Yes.
Sir, the concern was about our staff and to kick this up. Is that correct? So it shouldn't make any difference who threw it out. It should be the same for everyone.
Chair Shannon, Senator Georgia, it's an issue where there's already littering statutes on the books that apparently are not being effective in putting youth litter patrol are instructed not to pick stuff up the market, so they're not picking it up, but putting our employees in a disgusting situation, if you want to look at it that way.
I'm sure she can follow up.
Is she here?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, there you are. Okay.
One of the things we heard was that apparently some of the routes may in fact be pushing the truck driver right to the edge of their logbook in order to save time. It's kind of like a pilot does in an aircraft and can't get down from 10,000 feet. So you have a container, right? But I understand that, right? Was any concern? Is this ODOT still?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I came from Representative Montgomery, Representative Lyman, I believe.
Okay. I didn't know if you had a question. I didn't.
No.
Okay. Let me ask a question this way, then. It would appear to me that one way to solve that is to be able to put a PT in your middle of your logbook that would allow you 10 minutes of break time that would not count against your in-service time.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, I'm not conversant enough with commercial carrier laws to know what the answer is. I want to say one thing for the record, that this has been portrayed as a trucker-only bill, and I think that the Dash 3 amendments correctly say that exactly what Senator George said. This is I don't want to portray it as a trucker-only bill. We have found a lot of these at truck brake check areas, but you know, we can't say for sure that it's only truckers doing this.
So the diapers
I'll go along with that one.
Well, I'll tell you what. Our vice chair has reminded me that we have a representative from the House, and there I do want to talk about these amendments.
Okay.
So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3530 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3830 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3085. And do you want to come, Representative Rob Patrick?
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'd like to bring Captain Nelson.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3085 expands the authorization to use of Fogo radar systems to all cities. Beaverton and Portland have done a pilot program with Fogo radar. This will also require time to be posted notifying drivers of photo radars in use and specify the distance for the time to notify people. And this passed out of the House with 34 ayes and 24 nays.
Okay, Janet.
Oh, we do have one amendment to the bill today that it would specify that photo radar may only be used in Portland, Beaverton, Medford, and Bing.
Okay, thank you. Sam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, I'm State Representative Rob Hackett. I represent House District 50, which is the city of Medford. Some of you may know I came up to Medford City Council prior to coming to the state legislature, as well as being a deputy district attorney for Jackson County. I come to you today realizing the strain on police resources and public safety resources that exist not only within our cities and counties across the state of Oregon, but also at the level of the state of Oregon. I sit on the Public Safety Subcommittee currently and have continued to hear from police agencies and others across the state of Oregon about how strained resources are for law enforcement personnel. That's the reason I introduced House Bill 3085 in regards to photo radar. I had the opportunity to look at some of the studies and things that have been done both in Portland and Beaverton and other jurisdictions across the country in regards to the effectiveness to photo radar in improving public safety and slowing traffic in the areas, especially around sensitive areas such as school zones and other areas where pedestrians gather, parks and those types of areas, as well as residential streets where children often play, especially after work and after school. because of the traffic problem we have in the state as well as the congestion that occurs in the city, I introduced House Bill 3085. It was heard on the House side, in the House Judiciary, Civil Judiciary Committee, passed out of that committee and passed across the floor, and you are in the seat of that. During the course of this bill's history, it has been changed. We changed it. Originally, it had been jurisdictions that would include cities and counties. We narrowed this bill down to cities only. In addition, we also added in an amendment that you see in Section 1E, where it says photo radar may not be used unless a sign is posted announcing that the photo radar is in use. The sign must be on the street on which the photo radar unit is being used and must be no closer than 100 yards and no further than 400 yards from the location of the photo radar unit. I guess where I'm at in regards to this bill is it does save precious resources that occur for law enforcement. It requires that a law enforcement officer be present operating the photo radar system as speeding vehicles pass by. It also requires that the signage be placed. I guess putting on my old prosecutor hat, if you put someone on notice and put a sign out in front of them saying that there's a photo radar unit being used ahead and they still want to continue to speed on the roadways in which they speed upon, I believe that they deserve the ticket, and I hope that it's not tickets what we're after here, but we're after public safety and the slowing and calming of traffic rather than putting multiple speed bumps and other things. It's worked very effectively in cities throughout this country as well as the cities of Portland and Beaverton. I'd urge and ask for your support and would be open to any questions.
Does anyone have questions?
I'm supportive of the bill, and so I'm just wondering, Representative Pastor, you've had a chance to see the Dash 7 amendments and whether or not you're supportive of those.
I have not seen those. I am aware in talking with the chair, though, that there may have been something that may be offered. It sounds like putting in the cities of Bend and Medford. I had hoped to allow more cities to be able to do this on a statewide basis because I believe in the pilot project. But I also realize the politics of the of this and other bodies, and I would choose not to, I guess, to, I would prefer to have the full bill, but I know that the city of Medford is very supportive of this and had their law enforcement people come and testify previously. I also believe Representative Williams worked very diligently for his city there outside of Portland, and Representative Williams, excuse me. I was very interested in being involved too, but those are kind of the two or three cities that have been pushing for this. I can't say that I would oppose the opportunity for Medford to be able to do that because that's the city I represent, but I would like to see it more expansive.
You'd rather leave it up to local control and have cities.
It is a local, right? It is a local control issue. Cities decide for themselves, and this wouldn't mandate, and the bill in its current form wouldn't mandate photo radar, and communities that were concerned about it wouldn't have to adopt photo radar, but there's some of us who are very concerned that there's one of the six, I think it's the sixth largest city in the state of Oregon currently, and expanding ever rapidly. I also have with me Captain Nelson, representing not only the city of Portland, but the Chiefs of Police Association. There has been a letter that has been passed to the committee, and I asked Madam Chair, that testimony be submitted into the record. Kevin Campbell, on behalf of the Chiefs of Police, could not be here today. He is otherwise detained. I'm not sure where he's at today, but he asked that be submitted into the record on behalf of the Chief. I asked to listen to the testimony of Captain Nelson.
Yes. I'd like to ask Representative Patrick a question.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the experience of the pilot location in Portland?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, Captain Nelson is here from the city of Portland, and he administers part of that program, and I'd rather have it be his firsthand information to to let you know that, if you don't mind.
Chairman Shannon, members of the committee, thank you for an opportunity to come before you today regarding House Bill 3085, involving use of photo radar enforcement for traffic speeding. For the record, I'm Captain Patrick Nelson, Portland Police Bureau Traffic Division. And as the representative said, Kevin Campbell had asked me to also say that Oregon Mills Association Chief of Police asked for this bill to come out. I've worked for law enforcement for about 32 years. I'm here to support the bill. You have a written testimony in front of you. I'm not going to go through that. I'd just like to summarize briefly several points. Photo radar is successful in reducing speeding. As an example of some success, I offer two following examples from Portland. One location that we looked at in Portland, the first recorded deployment that we had in that location was in May 15th of 1997. The total number of vehicles through the speeding location that we looked at after we had determined that the speed was proper for that area, that the zone was right, that we didn't have any other things. There was a church here and a bunch of houses, a daycare facility, and a number of other things. We found that 88% of the vehicles were in excess of 11 miles an hour over the speed limit. So we put photo radar out, and July 7th of 1997, we again looked at the speeding in that location. And at that time, as you're aware, photo radar can only be used a maximum of 4 hours any one day at any one location. So the very most times that we could have used it was a maximum of 4 hours for 8 different times at that location. At the end of that, we looked at the number of cars through again, and that time only 12% of the ones were speeding through that location. That's a reduction of 86% vehicles at one location that were speeding with nothing other than photo radar after we determined the proper speed limit. I looked again at that same location in 1998, and it was now down to 4.7% of all the vehicles through were speeding. That's a 95% reduction from the first time that we deployed until the last time that we deployed. The second location we looked at, the first deployment was March 25th of 97. In that case, we had 475 vehicles, or about 26% of them were 11 miles an hour over the posted limit. In October 4th of 1997, after 15 deployments of photo radar, there was an 88% decrease in the violation at that same spot. There were other locations, but I'm not going to continue on with them. All of the locations had periodic deployments, and this study was by no means scientific. The drivers cited under the photo radar program are, for a great part, honest, law-abiding citizens who have gotten into a habit of traveling the streets of familiar areas much too rapidly. Photo radar provides a very shocking wake-up notice to those drivers, and they've responded by reducing their speeds on our streets. Traditional enforcement will always be needed, and increasingly tight, as the Senate representative said, increasingly tight budgets require that we look to the most effective way to reduce speed and thereby reduce traffic injuries and increase neighborhood livability. Photo radar requires the presence of only one officer, but it creates a large enforcement. And officers who would otherwise be involved in large-scale enforcement things can now go about and do other parts of things in the community. I know that there are a number of studies like Mesa, Arizona's that was done in conjunction with the University of Arizona, and they lend scientific validity to what our experience is in Portland. So I would ask again for your consideration of passing this bill, and I support I'm available for questions.
You limited it to 4 hours a day during your pilot period. So why did you limit it to only 4 hours?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, that's the bill requires. The bill mandates you may not deploy photo radar at any location. So the state statute is what mandates it.
So another question,
yes,
Madam Chair. So are you going to recommend that it be extended to more than 4 hours, or are you going to keep it at that limit?
I believe that that's what they have is 4 hours. Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, Section 1 of the A and Growth version of Act Bill 3085, Section 1, 2, Little C, may not be used for more than 4 hours per day in any one location. We've always done is try and open it up to cities to make it available if cities choose to want to use photo radar as a technique to stretch their law enforcement dollars, and that's the reason that we did this. But it has to comply with what Portland did, and in addition, we put up the signage. We added in the signage requirement, which wasn't required before, but I believe Portland used signs.
Well, we post signs going in. Madam Chair, we post signs going into the city. We don't post them behind the van, but the van is a marked police van with a large reader board that shows the speed of all the cars going through.
Oh, but you have another question.
Yes,
Madam Chair. So you're going to keep the limit at 4 hours?
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Well, if it seems to be very cost-effective, don't you want to extend the hours?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, in light of the politics, I believe, of the state legislature and what goes on, and I think people were comfortable with the 4 hours, and we didn't want to change it from where the pilot program was. 4 hours of enforcement is a pretty substantial length of time to patrol one area in one day. This is a marked police vehicle that is manned by a person, so 4 hours is probably going to be a sufficient time, and typically you're going to use these things during peak hours when there's a lot of speeding going on.
Mm-hmm. One more question. Yes. So what are the 4 hours that you post the radar photo car?
It can be whenever the department determines during the day that makes the most sense for that particular location. I think police departments in cities throughout the state of Oregon have identified basically hot spots within those cities where there's a lot of speeding that goes on. For example, my city and the city of Medford just ran a very time-intensive traffic program for people running red lights. Over the course of a month, they had 12 accidents at the location that they had people running lights over the course of 1 month, but they got some specialized grants so they could afford to do increased traffic enforcement, and they wrote over 250 tickets, I believe, just for running, I believe, a single intersection in the city of Medford for just brief periods of time. So those are the kinds of situations where you're going to use photo radar typically and move it from hotspot to hotspot. So it slows down traffic and calms, especially around school areas. People are going to work at the same time children are going to school in the morning. While I was in the DA's office, it was out in the county, but it's a more urbanized area of the county. We had a small child killed as a result of a speeding on that highway during the morning time. Then a traffic study was done out in that area, and the average speed was over 15 miles an hour over the speed limit in that area. And if you had photo radar in a situation like that, you can place the photo radar units there for a period of time to where you've got the traffic under control. And the city of Portland proves when you have 86% reductions in traffic rates coming under compliance, it is a good thing, and you're not having as much law enforcement time. You're still allowing these law enforcement officers to go out and handle the felony calls that are so critically important, and that's what police officers, unfortunately, around the state are doing. They're not allowed to do as much traffic enforcement because they're just trying to keep up with the more serious crimes that are happening, whether it be domestic violence or other things within our community.
Yes.
Okay, yes or no answer to the following question.
Sure, go ahead.
Is there a technological mechanism to defeat photo radar?
I can't give you yes or no answer because I don't know.
Madam Chair, Senator, everything we've looked at, I suppose if there's something out there, everything we've looked at is not out there. It hasn't been available. I have lots of reasons for that, but it isn't. It's a very, very narrow beam, and even radar detectors many times won't pick up the beam of the photo radar van until they're already into it and out of it. It's only 50 to 100 feet behind the van at the very most. So it's marked van, clearly sighted. I mean, these things, we aren't hiding places.
I'm trying to approach my questions. I've seen advertised as countermeasures, and I was wondering if it was the same technological risk we've seen with radar, then Doppler, then all the other flybuster-type stuff that we've seen. And I didn't want an explanation because if there was technology, I'd rather have people shop for it and put it on the public record. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Oh,
please,
Representative
Max. That's fine. That's fine, Senator. Chairman Shannon, it's my pleasure to be here just to briefly speak in favor of this bill. Max Williams, for the record, I'm the representative for District 9 in Tigard, and I appreciate Representative Patridge bringing this bill forward, and we worked this bill fairly heavily in the Civil Judiciary Committee on the House side before the bill was sent to the floor. My community of Tigard in Washington County is a community, as most of you might know from driving through there, that it's a very congested area of the state. We have some very significant traffic problems, and this is an option that my city at least wants the opportunity to explore. They have analyzed the work that has been done in Beaverton and in Portland, and while they have not made this decision because it's a decision that would require the city council's involvement in allocating proper resources to go forward with this issue, it is an option that they wish to have considered. And as the law currently stands, they cannot have that option considered. So I come to you on behalf of my city and on behalf of my chief of police, who would ask that you simply make this opportunity available for other communities in this state to make the same decisions, to analyze the data, and then allow those local governing bodies of our cities to make the decision about whether or not to implement this technology in the community. I believe personally the photo radar will help with some of the problems we've got in our community with too little law enforcement in too few places and too many cars going too quickly through too many intersections in the school zones. And I believe this is a step in the right direction. So I would simply ask that the committee move the bill without any further restriction or limitation on any particular community's uses. And I'd be pleased to answer questions if you have any.
Does anyone have any questions?
I have another question. What I think. Is this going to be limited to a few cities, or is this going to be available to communities who desire to have them?
Madam Chair, Senator Yee, as the bill currently stands, it is available to cities within the state of Oregon to be able to do this if they choose to do so. That's the way it currently was done. We had two pilot programs in the city of Portland and Beaverton, which were very successful, and that's why I believe now is the time to open it up and allow other cities, rather than choosing one at a time, to be able to do this. I think that our law enforcement dollars are stretched substantially. I know the League of Oregon Cities and the Order of the League of Oregon Cities is here if you'd like to hear from them in regards to the League of Oregon City positions in regards to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dave Barenberg and represent the League of Oregon Cities. And the points I would make have been made more eloquently by the two representatives here. But just to reinforce what they said, that local law enforcement has, you know, a number of different tools to use in trying to protect the public. And I have my son Max here with me today, and as you know, life is more hectic. You're rushing around to soccer and other places. People tend to disregard more and more some of our speeding laws in places where they really shouldn't, that are the most hazardous and dangerous, especially to the children in our communities. And we've tried, police have tried saturation enforcement, better public education in the schools, and this just provides one more tool to try to get the message and try to reduce speeds. And a number of communities are looking at, you know, this as an option, and as the bill stands, it would allow them to continue investigating. Some cities, you know, would, as we've heard from, you know, Medford is very interested, Bend is very interested, Tigard wants to study it and look a little bit more, and I think the same with a number of other cities. I don't think passing the bill in its present form would lead to a rush of every city trying to adopt this. I think people would, in a very reasoned way, try to see, A, if there's a real problem in particular areas in the community, and B, whether this is the solution that will work. So I would urge the committee to move forward with this bill, and thank you very much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
yes.
I have a question for the gentleman from the lady.
Yes.
Would this bill bypass the affirmative vote of the city councils of the cities that would adopt use of photo radar? In other words, by creating the statutory authority, would the debate that I think will inevitably ensue about further electronic surveillance of citizens and the possible erosion of goodwill that police agencies have developed with community policing strategies, et cetera, will that debate happen at the city council level? Or will this bill allow that debate not to happen at all?
Senator Ferraioli, I think that this will allow the debate to happen. Currently, there's no point in having the debate because they're barred by state statute from even exploring the option of having a photo radar at a city council level. I think that there will be thoughtful debate at the city level. I just think that this opens it up to allow cities to have that thoughtful debate and make a decision jurisdiction by jurisdiction if they believe that this is a more effective way that law enforcement dollars can be used.
Madam Chairman, if I might as well, Senator Ferraioli, as a recent member of my own city's budget committee, I can tell you that the process that would require implementation of this program would involve the expenditure of money. So I can tell you that at least through the budget process, this debate would take place among members of the budget committee in my city in conjunction with the budget being offered by our law enforcement department and the city police department, and then also at the city council level as to whether or not the allocation of precious city resources would be an appropriate allocation considering other priorities. So I believe that debate, in fact, will happen on a city-by-city basis, and I can tell you for my city it would happen at several levels.
Well, I just was curious to know if there was any data on the revenue stream projections from operation of what obviously has to be a potential slot machine in reverse for the city, so I'll take a few units out there.
Senator Shannon, Senator Ferraioli, I don't have any of the data in regards to maybe the city of Portland might know how much additional revenue may have been generated as a result of this.
And
I don't think that wasn't the reason I brought the bill to balance the city's budget. I brought it to take care of public safety.
Chairman, I guess the concern that I had is that the discussion surrounding budget is that these things are net revenue producers. They look a little different on paper to a budget committee, and that may focus the debate away from the issue of civil liberties, which I think is the place where the debate needs to happen. But I can guarantee you that if this was available to counties, there'd be many counties in eastern Oregon where there are long, lonely stretches of roads and relatively few law enforcement officers that would become the most lucrative location. I mean, we could lease these locations to people. It'd be that good. So I've just been curious to know, is there anything in the bill that requires the city to have that debate prior to the utilization of this technology?
There's nothing that requires that they have that debate. I don't know how you'd monitor whether that was debateless thoughtful or not, but I know in accordance with state law and in accordance with the spending of city dollars that some decisions will have to be made or contracts entered into in regards to these situations. I think almost every city across the state of Oregon in terms of spending any money would have to have that debate, and you know, I would hope that the civil liberties issue is, I know that that's a concern of some people in regards to this issue, would come up, but I will tell you in the law that there is not a reasonable expectation of privacy in your car to tell who the person is and those things in terms of looking in the car from
a Chairman, if the oil of community that's going to move forward, I'd be happy with the expectation in the record that those debates would happen at the city council level where those machines were utilized.
I was just looking at it right. You're safe on the long stretches because it doesn't allow it to count as.
Oh, it's only to
the way it's written right now. But.
Madam Chair, and to answer Senator Ferraioli's question too, and I think in the cities that have used this, this hasn't been a cash cow. I mean, one of the reasons is that you're required to have a police officer present. Another is that if there is any doubt in the photo identification, they've erred on the side of pitching up. You know, so that it's just not even beyond a reasonable doubt, it's beyond doubt when they send them out, so that there's a ratio of ones that are knocked off. And second, too, is that there's that limitation on the number of hours that one may operate a system, so you can't just sort of take out the one spot and then go have the officer leave and operate remotely at business. So.
Madam Chairman, what this means is that I will be wearing those glasses and neck vest. I think you've seen those things around Halloween.
And also, Senator, I didn't mean you specifically. I meant anybody driving along stretches on Texas roads.
I think my brushes with the constabulary are never public records. Unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a sergeant now that wants to head captain. But
sorry, I wrote it in there.
You were okay. There we go. Okay.
I apologize for the rain.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3085 and go back to our public hearing on House Bill. And open a public hearing on 3530. Where is that? Okay. And where were we on that list? Doug. Doug, right. Okay, let's come back to Doug. Oh, it's the bill on the, right.
Human waste.
Human waste.
We'll kind of discuss this under the amendment action to give our questions.
Right. Okay. And it was that I thought I heard you say that really to your employees that pick it up, it doesn't matter if it came from a car or a truck, it's ready to deal with.
Yeah.
And it would be fair to adopt the dash 3.
Yeah.
Okay. So then what about the next? We're just talking to you about the dash 4. What's that?
Let's see. I don't have the dash 4.
No, go ahead.
It says that the only punishment would be a $250 fine, a maximum fine. It takes away the protection of the driver's license.
I remember this one. I know why. That, Senator, see, this is because this would only hurt in-state, because we are not able to suspend drivers, the commercial license of out-of-state truckers. Is that true?
Shannon, I believe that the classified driver's license, the CDL, is a multi-state consortium, and I think that if you get suspended in one state, you're suspended everywhere.
In all 50?
Yes.
Okay, so that would have been on page, let's just look, page 1, line 2, after sentences, grades were in out of period. The rest of the bill is deleted. The rest of the bill, after the section, because the only change later on in the bill is about the time. All the other changes are moving up.
Person.
Oh, so you wouldn't be okay.
You're changing the 25 cents.
Madam Chair, who submitted the dash 4 amendment?
Me.
Oh, okay.
Because I was concerned.
Okay.
I think $3,500 is pretty steep. And if we didn't, I mean, to lose your whole livelihood, I remember somebody threw an apple out one time.
Mm.
You know, to lose your whole livelihood, this is your driver's license.
Quite different than urine, though.
True. But, you know, if the woman is a school bus driver and she throws it out, she's riding with her husband, she'd have to... What we're talking about, Senator Carrillo?
Ma'am, don't go there. That's not what we're talking about. Thank you.
Well, what we're talking about is the fine. Should it be $2,500? And we already kind of agreed that if we are going to steal driver's license, it should be anybody that throws it out, whether it's a rider in a car, rider in a van, or rider in a truck. That anybody should lose a driver's license. Then the next amendment, dash 4, would reduce fines to $2,500. and that would be the fine. Hmm. What is it for littering now? The fine, you know?
I'm sure Shannon is trying to remember that. I can't remember what the fine for littering is right offhand.
Is it 100? What is it?
I think that's right. I think it was
5. Oh, maximum. Well, ours doesn't say maximum. Ours just says it is. Oh, it is maximum. There it is, right there.
So you could get popped for 500 plus 250.
Sure you
could. Mm-hmm. I'm going nowhere with this thing if it isn't dash 4.
Have the dash, Madam Chair? Uh-huh. Dash 4 also deletes suspension?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Which I said just before you came in, it's really something to throw something out because you, like Senator George said, you know, with those breaks and then lose your whole life, chance of livelihood. Okay, then what was the dash 5? Oh, post. Oh, I definitely think you should post. Because, yes.
Sure, Shannon, let me make a suggestion. Again, I haven't seen the dash 5. I think that regardless of what the committee does, if you move this bill, whether it's you lose your driver's license, whether it's a $2,500 fine or $250 fine, whatever you do, I think that it carries with it the fact that the legislature is making a statement that they don't like this, okay? And what I would suggest, rather than putting up signs, is that we do the public information campaign to get the word out that way, because it's going to really get out broader than the people that's entering Oregon. It's really going to get the word out to everybody, whether you live in Oregon or whether you travel across the border in Oregon, that this is something that the state of Oregon doesn't care for, and we don't want you doing it.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
And I would agree with Doug that this could be posted in jails and port of entry, big sign there or a small sign. We can maybe get the petroleum dealers to sign up that says, along with there is a new law.
Senator Shannon, Senator George, I was just suggesting our usual public outreach notification rather than a particular sign, just to save money.
But I think we should. Do other states specifically have signs? Because someone just may come here from Arkansas or someplace, and the sign, they have no excuse. If they didn't have the radio on, they had the CD player or whatever, and the sign would be there, and I think it should be there coming into the state.
Chair Shannon, it carries with it the fiscal, but if that's, I assume,
well, the reason is, right. The reason is that the law says you cannot ticket somebody for parking in a handicap unless the sign is there, and that's what I thought that you should be notified that this is a crime. Not a crime, but an offense that you're about to commit. And especially if we're the only state, then you should sign.
Chair Shannon, let me give you a one other court law that I know about that we don't sign for, and that is U-turns. In this state, U-turns are illegal unless specifically permitted. In every other state, U-turns are legal unless specifically prohibited. So there are other cases where our laws are different that we don't post signs for. But I appreciate the sentiment of wanting to notify people coming into the state. So I'm not in opposition to indicating that there's probably some fiscal that goes with that.
Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, did we envision Welcome to Oregon, Keep Oregon Green?
Keep Oregon Green, not yellow.
I'm so attached to that.
Something like a bottle coming out of it. Madam Chairman, I do have maybe a more serious question. The commercial drivers have more interface with the Public Utility Commission when they get their certificates and they get go through their waste jail tags and so forth. What about putting a warning on those or giving a warning or posting warnings or notifying people when they do those captures on those waste jails?
Chair Shannon, Senator Ferrioli, that's actually Motor Carrier Division of the Department of Transportation, not Public Utilities, and I believe that's what Senator George was suggesting, is that would be the appropriate place to do the notification at those points.
Thank you.
I guess what I was going to say is I don't know why we would have to post this, because I can't imagine that people would think this is acceptable behavior, you know, and so, I mean, I would think it would just that everybody would know you're not supposed to do this, so
And if you do it and there's a consequence, well, you know, I mean, that's something that you're supposed to do anyway.
Well, the real senator, I just was thinking that if they go to state that does, that they should have a warning. They couldn't say, well,
you know, we didn't know.
Yeah, we didn't know. That's a good thing, you know.
And so you already had a law against littering.
Yeah.
And then it becomes a charge under the law of offensive littering. This is really offensive littering.
Not to my knowledge. Okay. Well, I'm just going to come back here. So I'd like to adopt at least, actually, if we adopted the dash 4, then it would lower it, and I'm not so sure about the fines. If you were going to take $2,500 from somebody in their driver's license, then I really think you should post it, if you're going to take away their livelihood. But if we adopt the dash 4, then maybe the signage isn't as important. So we don't have to, you know, take away the driver's license.
Are we in a work session?
No.
Oh, okay. We're just
talking. Yeah.
Can I talk to you?
Yes.
Okay. Madam Chair, thank you. In a different discussion in a different committee the other day, I pointed out that you can take a bright yellow piece of paper, put it in your photocopier, and out comes a really bright yellow sign with black lettering in it. It really stands out. And if we can have assurance from ODOT that if that five went away, that every way station would have posted in the little window and they all have glass, you know, that this little thing is here that says, you know, don't do this because there's new sign on it. That would sure make me feel better.
Chair Shannon, Senator George, we would have no problem. That's the kind of thing I was thinking of, actually.
Okay.
And bright yellow is probably an appropriate color.
Yeah, I
know. Okay, then,
I'm not sure.
I don't mind, but I just want to do the dashboard. That's the one that they didn't lose their license first time.
Oh, I want dash 4.
Dash 4 is the one that's fully eliminated.
That's what I meant. Yeah, oh, you're right. I was on the wrong one. Dash 4. Okay. All right. Then we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3530, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 3530.
Madam Chair, I would like to move the dash 4 amendment, LC 3771, 52099, to House Bill 3530.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, you still adopted it. I just want to make one, because I think this will pass, and if there's really objections in the House, we'll work it out in conference committee. This isn't the last shot. We'll have it to deal. Okay. So you want to move it to the floor?
Yes. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 3530 as amended or the due pass.
Senator George has moved House Bill 3530 as amended to the floor with the due pass.
A. Yes. So, Madam Chair, are we going to post any fines?
No. ODOT said they probably would do it at the waste, you know, closed entries, yes.
Oh, are they just going to allow little window signs?
Something like that. On the window.
On the windows of the gas stations or at the window of the truck?
Truck. But if they get a green light and they don't have to stop, they won't see it, but that's their problem.
Well, I'm sure. I think also that Doug mentioned that their normal educational process would include other materials indicating that the sign now existed.
Right, like in the PUC.
The newsletter and
Senator Castillo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so with the amendments, the dash 4 amendments, we're saying that even if you were a repeat offender of this, that you would not have your license suspended. Is that correct?
Under this part, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then I'll be a no on the bill. I'm not sure, I sort of am in between what we did and what the original bill is, because I do feel the $2,500 is a huge fine. But I also feel that, you know, today, you can get exposed to some pretty serious stuff in your people's urine, and it could be a very serious human health issue that we're talking about here. And if somebody repeatedly does this, you know, I wouldn't have any problem taking that person's license away because they are causing a public health hazard. So,
Just a minute before taking, Senator Castillo, I agree with you that if we don't move these, and we could have those run up for the conference committee, I believe that, you know, repeat offenders should be stronger here.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and I'm going to vote no now, and maybe I'll change my mind.
Yeah, maybe when it comes back. Okay. Anyone else like to say anything? Okay, will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Steele?
No.
Senator Perry?
Aye.
Senator George?
Aye.
Senator
Yee? Aye.
Aye. I've received a majority of House Bill 3530. A, as amended, goes to the floor with the due pass, and Senator Ferry only will carry the bottle bill.
Did you refer to it as the bottle bill?
Yeah, I did. But remember, this, because this amendment takes out that commercial, so now, the way it is that any person throwing a diaper, even of a regular cost, would receive a fine. So it's just not for truck. Mm-hmm. Everybody would hit. Okay, thanks. Now we will close the work session on House Bill 3530. And open a
new
public hearing.
Any questions?
On Senate Bill 1324. Anything you want to tell us about it?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 1324 requires counties and cities to report to the Legislative Assembly on expenditures from the share of certain state tax revenues and state highway funds, dollars that they receive, and it requires that the Association of Oregon Counties and League of Oregon Cities report separately, that there are separate accounting for the counties and cities for the state tax.
Okay, and I would just like to add, since I have two witnesses, and that is that when I was testifying for our trust accounting bill over in the House, I think he's a vice chair, but Representative Mike Lehman said, you want this for the state, ODOT, what about the cities and counties? You give them, I think it's 40%, 40 or 60. 40% of the
70.7.
Right. And what about the counting on them? And this bill, what it does, I need to add one more thing to that. The audit, did you ever take a photocopy of the audit? Okay. The audit said in it that are you gonna read it?
It is what it said.
Okay.
The auditors found that counties and cities commingled state highway fund monies with monies from a variety of other sources. As a result, the auditors were unable to specifically identify expenditures for road and street operations and were solely funded by state highway fund money. But this practice of commingling, they also stated, is allowed. It was illegal.
And my husband works for the School Board Association, and I was talking to him about this, and he said, all the money that comes from the Department of Ed pays for transportation, which is 70% of their transportation, goes in the transportation bank account. It doesn't go into the school district's general fund and then pay for transportation. This is the money that comes in, and this is how it's spent. And you wouldn't have to rule out of that much, but you could just see this is what the state gave them, and this is how they spent it. And in working this up, I really don't think the bill has opposition, but Jay Theron, would you like to come, he's still here, yeah, Dave, from League of Oregon Cities, and Bill Penhollow, would you like to come and share your concern?
Yes, with me too.
Okay. Pardon me? Are you aware of the -1 amendment? What is the -1?
When it's city population under
5,000. Oh, right, yeah. It does not apply to a city with a population under 5,000.
Okay.
This is not 2203. It's 1324. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Del Penhollow, and with me today on my right are Bob Thomas from the Multnomah County Transportation Division and Roy Burns from Lane County Public Works Department. And I believe you know on my left, Mr. Barenberg from League of Cities. Madam Chair, as your committee administrator explained, the bill does basically three things, and I would like to just cover those. But before I do, I did want to mention on your comment about cost accounting. I just would like to add so that the committee is aware that there is an existing statute that requires counties to do cost accounting, and it has been on the statutes for a number of years. So we do have that responsibility, and counties do cost accounting of their road department work.
But Mr. Pennell, you're absolutely right, and I was not inferring. It's just that it came up during the discussion of the ODOT cost accounting bill. Yes. You're absolutely right.
I just wanted to clarify that. Thank you. Madam Chair, the bill does basically three things for cities and counties. Section 1, subsection 2, talks about reporting, a revised reporting process, and now it says each legislative session. This would require then that we report annually to the Legislative Assembly, and it redefines the areas in which we would report. We see no major problem with that because we already prepare reports for the Department of Transportation and the Federal Highway Administration and have used those in the past to provide this information to the legislature, which cover the areas listed there. The single exception is line 14, bicycle paths. We do not report that at this time as a separate expenditure. It is included in the total expenditures report for construction, expansion, or preservation and maintenance. The second aspect would require the Association of Oregon Counties, or for the counties and the League of Cities, for the cities to report on behalf of their entities. And that is something that we had encouraged and suggested. That we accumulate this information rather than having 36 reports from 36 different counties presented to the legislature and how many city reports presented, we felt it would be appropriate to consolidate those one report submitted to the legislature. The third area is has to do with the accounting system, and this bill would direct cities and counties to establish a separate accounting system to account for the monies received out of the state highway fund. That is our state gas tax, the weight mile tax, and vehicle registration fees. And Madam Chair, those funds, I think not unlike you talk about the school district, are in the county's case, deposited in the county road fund, and in the city's case, deposited in the city street fund. And those funds are then dedicated, as you will see in the information that I have passed out to you, for use on only the roads and the bridges of the county. ORS 368705 prescribes that, as well as the Oregon Constitution and other provisions in the Oregon laws. The funds, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are other funds deposited as directed by the statute in the county road fund. I cite in the material that I provided you a couple of three instances. Number one is the federal forest revenues, which state law says that the receipt of those funds are they could be divided, and initially 25% goes to the county school fund, and 75% goes to the county road fund. So historically, the law has directed counties and cities to put these funds into their road funds. Those then are separate funds from the general fund. If you will, there is a firewall between those funds. They cannot be transferred for use for general fund purposes, must be used strictly as the statutes provide for road purposes. The courts have been very strict in interpreting these statutes. We have three court cases where actions beyond that kind of limitation have been challenged, and the courts have said, no, you cannot use those except for road purposes. And finally, county officials and city officials under the municipal finance law are personally liable for any misappropriation or misuse of those funds. So they are very cautious about how they use those funds, because a taxpayer or the district attorney, for that matter, could bring a suit against the public official for recovery of any misappropriated funds. So what we would like to present to you today is that there is a reason for commingling those funds. It is that the statutes have directed us to do it. Your administrative assistant has talked about the Department of Transportation audit and the report with regard to commingling funds. The last page on the material that I've provided to you actually summarizes the findings and the recommendations of that audit report and indicates that those monies are commingled. They make the statement the commingling of the monies for road and street programs make good business sense. However, they do recommend that commingling of monies should be formalized and formally recognized as a good business practice, and this could be accomplished either by statute or by Attorney General's opinion. Now, we would like to suggest to you, and Mr. Thomas and Mr. Burns will present testimony to you concerning the fiscal impact that the provisions of subsection 4 of section 1 and subsection 4 of section 2 would have on counties in establishing a totally new and separate fund for just the state highway revenues. We feel that they are well protected now constitutionally, and that the expenditure of creating this additional system of separating out the state highway funds from other road funds would just create additional expenses for the county and really not gain that much additional county. I would point out to the committee members that not only do we have budget adopted by public members on the budget committees, but we also have annual audits of the county budgets, which include the road funds. So it's funds are extensively guarded, protected at the county level.
And Ms. Lawrence.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair. I served for 6 years on a county budget committee, and we had multiple little teeny tiny accounts throughout that budget. I see this as no problem to set up within, let's say, the road maintenance section, two separate accounts, and they move those dollars out of there. Very simple thing for them to track them. Almost all the counties, like Danville County, they have a centralized accounting system now. The data comes in, they process it, they get the appropriate account and make the appropriate allocation. I mean, is that unusual? I mean, are we years ahead of anyone else in doing that kind of transaction?
Madam Chair, Senator George, that certainly leads into comments I think that Mr. Thomas and Mr. Burns can make about the current practices and what they do now and how they see this would change that current practice.
You don't want any.
Senator McBurge will finish that like that.
Are you finished?
Well, I would follow up real quickly. Back on the summary of the recommendations in the back of the county's presentation, the Oregon Revised Act requires cities to report state highway fund monies in a state tax refund. But they're silent about other monies being added to it. Seems to me that a real simple thing to do is we already have that fund. Set up a new one for any other monies that may come in there in a parallel account, and then have a county system just deal with that as far as who's responsible, what account is responsible for what expenditure. And I think that would just be good business.
Madam Chair, Senator George, I think what is happening at the county level is that there are separate funds, as you point out, and those are set up for specific expenditure purposes. The road fund is set up to receive revenues and make expenditures on the county roads and the county bridges. What, as we read this provision, this would require at least two funds and the management of two funds with the expenditures going for a single purpose, and that is for the county roads. And feel that that additional accounting really does not accomplish anything additional at the county level, or really any additional comfort, I would guess, for the legislature, because we are reporting on how those monies are expended. There is an annual audit on how those monies are expended, and I think if you would take the time to hear Mr. Thomas could talk about some of the accounting problems with regard to making expenditures for a single purpose out of multiple funds. I think that's where the complication comes.
Testimony, Mr. Kenhauer, I think is you stated that the statute compels commingling. I read this as the statute is silent on commingling. It's a big difference.
Okay.
Clarify, please.
Certainly. Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, if you will, as I point out in this material, the road fund is established in 368705 for the purpose of receiving any property taxes that are levied for road purposes. Then Senator Ferrioli in 366524 and following deals with the allocation of state highway funds. Those funds have been deposited and in the road fund, it has been a long-standing practice to do that. There have been at least two attorney general's opinions that refer to that.
Madam Chairman, maybe I'll restate my question. Okay. Now, I heard you say that the statute compels commingling. Which statute compels commingling?
Okay. Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli. You have a statute creating the county road fund. You have the deposit of the state highway funds in the road road fund. And then, if you will, in 294060, the allocation of federal forest revenue specifically says that the 75% that go for roads are to be deposited in the road fund.
We have a federal statute.
No,
I'm sorry,
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli. This is Oregon Revised Statute 294060, which tells the county how to handle those federal funds and says you take 25% to go to the school fund for school purposes, which is a part of the county budget. You have the general fund, you have the school fund, you have the road fund, among other funds. And then 75% of those monies are to go into the county road fund.
Madam Chairman,
yes.
I guess I'd like to ask a follow-up question.
Yes.
Within the county road fund, Mr. Penhall, is it common to see numbered accounts within the fund?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, yes.
And aren't those numbered accounts used for the purpose of specifically identifying and tracking receipts and disbursements within the fund?
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, they are identified as receipts of the expenditure. If you would note in the material that I've provided you under county disbursements, are expended in categories such as construction, preservation, maintenance for actual road functions. And those revenues become a single source and then are expended by account number for those various kinds of functions, not segregating that part of that expenditure is state highway fund. A part of it is federal forest revenue in Multnomah County. A part of it is their own county gas tax revenue.
Madam Chairman, don't counties routinely have multiple revenue sources that have statutory limitations for which they have to demonstrate an account for the expenditures as to purpose and scope? For instance, grant funding, Mr. Town Hall, and sometimes you've got the grants that are specifically limited for purposes that are clearly stated in the grant application, and those funds are a portion of the total project, not the whole project. And even though expenditures are for a single purpose, they're from a multitude of sources, and you're required to account for those expenditures. And the way I understand that happens is through creating numbered accounts within funds, which can track expenditures and receipts of dollars. And it's a commonly accepted accounting practice used in every municipality and county in the state, not the nation. I'm wondering why it is that a separate accounting system needs to be set up when clearly all you need, in my opinion, is a couple of additional cells on the spreadsheet.
Mm-hmm. Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I believe you're correct in that assumption. With regard to grant monies, there is generally a separate fund established to receive those revenues. If they're federal revenues, their federal revenues frequently require a local match, so the local match would be in there. But they would generally be used for a single project expenditure. And no distinguishing of the fact that some of those dollars were federal dollars and some of those dollars were matching dollars. I've gone basically beyond my knowledge of county budgeting, and maybe Mr. Thomas could help me out with regard to how the counties actually receive and account for those monies. We certainly account for the separate revenues that come into the fund, but as the expenditures are made, they're made by a expenditure category or a work activity category. If we might, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd like to have Mr. Thomas present his testimony, and then maybe we can have some additional questions.
Sure, thanks. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Senators, I'm Bob Thomas from Multnomah County. I'm the Support Services Manager. I'm heavily involved in budgeting of the road fund, Multnomah County's road fund. I think to answer Senator Farioli's question on accounting for, say in this case, state highway tax funds, specifically for state highway tax fund projects. The large problem that I see, and it's really described in my written testimony, is the fact that the state highway tax fund has no other dedicated purpose other than the same, it has essentially the same purpose that all of the other county road funds have. We have, as far as Multnomah County goes, I think I described on the first page that 68% of our road fund revenue, at least in 97-98, came from the state highway fund apportionment. Another 20% from our county gas tax. Both of those two sources have essentially the same mandated purpose. They both are required for the maintenance, preservation of highways, bridges, described as Bill had described by two different areas in the ORF, but essentially the same purpose. So the big problem or question that a county road official would have would be to how to decide which of all of the expenditures that we do, when they're all essentially the same, which do we bill to the state account, which do we bill to the county account, when they're all for the same purpose. And as I described in the testimony, there's a couple of different ways that I see doing it. And one would be that we would have specific programs or cost centers that would be billed to this new state tax road funds, such as road maintenance, traffic signs and signals, bridge maintenance. And then all of the others would be charged to this other fund. But how would we decide which activities would go to the state fund when our overall dedicated purpose is for all of these activities? So that might be one method of doing that, is accounting for two separate funds, having program by program responsibility to that fund. And again, you have to determine how that is taken care of, and whether that's a state matter or a county matter. It's a very difficult question. The other way that it could be done would be to actually determine at the start of the year, well, in 1997, 98, we know that we had 68% state money that came in, so you might set up a formula at the start of the year. Well, 68% of all of our expenditures will be to this state tax road fund within the county or the city, and then throughout the year monitor that. In our particular case, we had 2,000 payment vouchers come out of our particular office. Countywide, there may have been another 5,000 to 10,000 journal entries made just to the road fund. And at the end of the year, you'd have to go back and reconcile each one of these back to whatever the actual amount turned out to be. You guess at the front end it's going to be 68%. At the end of the year, it may be 70%. Okay, so you've got accountants throughout the county trying to figure out, okay, is this a state tax growth fund issue, or is this a all other source county loan fund issue, when it's all basically the same project? So that's the difficult real life operational problem that I see in trying to deal with this particular issue. And since in fact counties and cities are required to account for how we spend those funds, all of these dedicated funds, as Bill described in the survey, I'm wondering, why would we want to add one more operational, it's this real conundrum that I don't know if any of us could really operate under.
I want to see, to me, it's a simple question. It seems to get be so complicated. If you can't figure it out, how can the auditor?
Well, the figure out
where the state fund, that's what they said. We can't tell. We try to trace it.
Well, they can see that in our case,
mm-hmm.
if 68% of our revenue
mm-hmm.
was from this state tax,
mm-hmm.
the state highway fund, and if the auditors found that there was no problem in the disbursement of those funds, and if they recognized that there was, in fact, no problem with the dedication of each of those, the dollar spent in the fund, therefore there wouldn't be a problem with this commingling. But as you saw, they did in fact have an issue. Well, we don't see a problem with it, but right, maybe it isn't quite right.
We don't know because
yeah.
we can't follow it. But my question, if this road cost $2 million
mm-hmm.
and you had $1.5 million from the state and $500,000 from the Fed, why couldn't you say, well, here's the bill and here's the money, we're going to pay $1.5 million from our state road fund and $500,000 from the Fed?
Well, you can estimate at any one time how much those
Well, I know why after you have to pay the bill. And you have to pay all those people.
Okay, as it is now, go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I was just going to add that in a construction project, that's probably pretty easy to keep track because you have a construction project
accounting process. And you could say, okay, frequently we have federal funds involved in that kind of a situation. So you could say X dollars are going from federal funds, X dollars are going from local funds. I think it becomes more of a problem when you're talking about the ongoing maintenance and preservation of the road system, where all of those funds are basically directed for material supplies and personnel to take care of the of the roads that the county has the responsibility for. So I think, you know, under a construction project, it's basically accounted for that way. Under a maintenance project, it's accounted for as a maintenance function.
You can't transfer money out of the state to pay wages for a maintenance job?
Yes, that's what happens now, Madam Chair. Those monies are there. The difference is that there are other dedicated road fund monies in that account that basically take on the color of state highway funds. And they're dedicated by the Constitution for a very narrow kind of expenditure purpose.
Right, but you could say, we have still have money in our state fund. Let's pay three-fourths of the bills we have for that project, because it qualifies. And then when you give a report, this much was for the state road, although we had to backfill with federal money. If every little school district can do it, I don't know why it is such a problem with, a city to say these are all our others, but this is our state fund checkbook, and this is how we spend it.
Well, I guess our difference is that that's what we are doing today.
Mm-hmm.
Except we are not going to the additional expense of segregating those into multiple funds and making it and managing multiple funds. We're managing them in one single fund.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the audit that was done for the Department of Transportation this past year, the auditors said that it's going on. It has been a practice. It makes good business sense. It probably should be either confirmed by a statute or by an attorney general's opinion that says that's a good business way of handling those funds.
He said that because that wasn't what I read from
that. That was, yes, Madam Chair, in the findings and the recommendations that they advanced from that audit.
Because it was the auditors that first raised this issue.
In our case, for the transportation division, we're operating now in about five funds. Well, sub-accounts, as if you look on the front page of my testimony, you can see that there are a number of programs shown. These would be the main program areas. Each of these would be a sub-account, an organization in our chart of accounts, where expenditures are spent.
And I assume that channels are separately numbered.
Correct. Those are separately numbered.
So adding another sub-account for state highway taxes would completely confound the accounting system and render tens of thousands of additional dollars in expenses for management.
Correct. Here's where the problem comes with just adding another number. This isn't just right now we're describing our activities based on program areas, road maintenance, traffic, engineering. A question would be, do we add one more line item for state tax road fund expenditures? Because the expenditures that we're having now from our state taxes are all expended within these program areas. Okay. Yes, we could double the number of chart of our organization. Right now we're running about 100 with our capital projects, so that we could split, say, if this was 97, 98, 68% of our expenditures could go on a particular project into this chart, another 68% into that chart. Yes, that could be done. And then as well, we have a cost accounting system that we use for reimbursing or for actually for providing a lot of the information that we give annually in our local road and street survey that would also have to be doubled up. It is something that's possible. And yes, it could be done. The benefit is still questionable.
I absolutely agree that the benefits are questionable to the category. Absolutely. And the additional expenditures and time and administration from the county standpoint, there's no value to the process at all. But they arguably are, or they are not arguably unencumbered funds are statutorily and constitutionally dedicated. I guess the idea of commingling is a felony if done in a client's trust account or a reserve account for an attorney, a problem for virtually every other business sector if done in dedicated funds. I guess I don't see the benefit particularly for the county, but there is a definite benefit in terms of accountability for trying to determine the funds that are constitutionally dedicated actually end up not becoming fungible because they were commingled.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli. For the record, I'm Dave Barenberg from League Oregon Cities, and I have some general comments when we move along a little bit, but just specifically to this, to answer Senator Ferrioli's question. I think what happens here is sort of the reverse of what the connotation of the term commingling means, and to the issue of what you said is fungibility, is we're sort of doing the opposite. We're saying, and I think that's where the confusion for us
is the term you're looking for, aggregation. And everybody understands how these dollars move. I'm just suggesting that we're trying to track constitutionally dedicated dollars through a budgetary process. Feedback from the our auditors is you can't do it. The response from the counties is we'll make commingling illegal and you don't have to. That doesn't solve the problem of tracking constitutionally dedicated dollars to the ground.
But that, Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, is the question, what we do is saying we get a pot of money from the state, and then we take local money, some of which is dedicated for the same purposes, some which before it goes into the fund, what could have been was fungible, could have been used for more police officers, but there's a local decision that this money is going to be used for roads. We put it into this pot, and when it gets into that pot, it's then subject to the same constraints that the state funds are, so that, you know, my left hand can only be used, you know, for roads now. And when I started, I had two fingers from the state, and I got three fingers locally. They're all used for only highway road purposes. And so what we can tell you, I think if it's right, we'll tell you that all the dollars in there were used for roads, and we can show it, and the auditor, private sector auditor, will say, yes, all the money in this account was spent for roads. And, you know, I think as the testimony said, we can't tell you if we pave 2 miles of road, whether, and 50% of the funds were from, in that fund are local, and 50% of the funds are state, which half of the road was paved. And so I think, you know, the question I got when I, you know, emailed the different financial folks were, we thought what was wanted was that the legislature has an assurance that's audited that all the money that came in for roads from the state was spent on roads, and we can assure that right now without, you know, any question to do that and be audited on it. but we can't tell you which road because we add additional dollars. And so that's what from the accounting and our folks saying, wait a second, we're doing it. We're spending the money on roads, but does it matter which roads? And then that becomes the accounting issue for us. And so that's just, I think you hit it on the head, which is, yes, it's something that can be done, but it does take extra work, extra accounting, and there's already the assurance in the process that the money is being spent on roads. Sorry, that was long. I apologize.
Actually, Madam Chairman, I think I did benefit from that explanation. I see the aggregation is not a problem. The disaggregation is a problem. And the allocation of the dollars. But that's the obligation under the Constitution.
Madam Chair, Senator Carrioli, I think it's the aggregation, and I think and we are aggregating the funds, but the disaggregation, it's still at that point it's kept in the box of you can't use that money for anything else, so that it's not, we're not taking money from that fund then and then using it from a non-constitutionally dedicated or prescribed purpose and then saying, but, you know, there's more in the pot. Okay. Thank you.
I don't think the bill asks you to decommingle. It just says you can commingle all that other, but put this in the state and then tell us how you wrote the checks. What's your cover? Go ahead.
That's just exactly what I'm sure what I was going to say. In the bill, it specifies a broader description of what the payments were made to the administration by fiscal past, construction expansion, that sort of list. But there's one thing I would like to comment on, and as after sitting there for 6 years on that committee, I recognize in our public works we had several things happen. At one time, we had the fair in there, and the fair budgets were set up, you know, under the management of the public works department, and all the monies were properly put in the right accounts, and they were all expended a certain way, and we build this one, and that sort of thing. The parks were in there. Now they've been moved to correction. The fair is now standing on its own. I'll talk about Yandere County. The county shop was a standalone for the county. Now the county shop does work for cities and it does work for, you know, other public entities in the area. And all of these expenditures and revenues flow into those accounts and they flow out. It's a very simple process. We have a ferry that we share with Marion County. And it has a little account in there, and this money's come in and this money's go out in accordance with that account. This is not a big deal to be able to do this. And you can change the account very quickly. I mean, we didn't add massive staff in order to accomplish what would be by many people, fairs, parks, shops. This is, by some people, would be described as massive changes, yet they float in and out by, basically, as Senator Ferriotti described, by just changing the account numbers and putting them in the appropriate category.
Okay. I wonder if you see any amendments that need to be to the bill. Senator always told me let's just pass it, work it like it is. But,
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking at the fiscal analysis here, and it says that Jackson County reports estimated cost of complying with the provisions of this bill could total as much as $38,000 per year, and it reports that these are monies that otherwise would be spent on roads. And we know that all the counties are just in serious need of money for roads. And we have a representative here from Lane County, and I'd like to hear from him how he thinks it would affect my county.
Chair Chan and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Roy Burns, Lane County Public Works. Certainly, accounting systems can be set up to track the monies. I ask our fiscal administrator in the Public Works Department to estimate on our behalf what it would take to set up this system initially and then to track it on an annualized basis. Based on the information that Ms. Sandusky provided to me, who is our fiscal administrator for Public Works, she indicated that we could set up the system initially for approximately $20,000, and then annually, in tracking this function, it would be approximately $12,000. I also asked Doug Kuchler, our maintenance manager, that what does it cost us to do routine maintenance effort on a county road? Chip seal is a process that's used quite frequently in Lane County. And Doug indicated to me that the average cost ranged between $10,000 to $14,000 per mile. I said, would you rather spend $20,000 for 2 miles of chip seal, or would you rather have $20,000 to set up another cost accounting system to keep track of those monies you already spend appropriately? And Doug assured me that he'd rather put 2 additional miles of chip seal on the county roads than to set up another cost accounting system on something that's already audited and already monitored routinely as to the expenditure of road funds in the county. Thank you.
Okay, I didn't ask him to develop another cost accounting system, but sure, George.
I'm sure I would like to remind everyone that the cities and counties get somewhere between $510 and $730 million in the state. But we are asking right now to see it proposed that we raise our gas tax to one of the highest in the nation. It will be probably, I would have guessed, third in the nation. We've already asked our truckers to pony up on heavyweight trucks, the highest in the nation. I think they have a right to know where these dollars are going. And if you think, I could, for example, just pull the bicycle account out of that budget, and it could give you $14 million if these numbers are right on how much gross dollars you're getting. So these are $10,000. I mean, that's a lot of money to a county budget. Believe me, I was there. But at the same time, when you start looking, let's bar graph this and take a look what $20,000 looks like against $700 million.
We'll take $700
million. Okay, turn it over to you to say something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Madam Chair, I want to have some general comments, too, just if I can go to the meeting quickly. The first is thank you for the process and involving us in drafting and talking with us about this. We appreciate it and appreciate the goal that you're trying to achieve and appreciate with the first section of the bill the idea of trying to, and I can kind of quickly, partly, cities and counties report expenditures and revenues, and I think in the way that we worked with your staff and the bill that you filed puts the reporting into categories that people other than transportation groupies like me can understand. And I think that the reporting through the, I can speak for the city part, through the lead to the legislature provides an opportunity of having a better communication, and I think that helps us all as we address this issue. And I think, you know, it's a very positive step to formalize it in the way that's included in the bill. The one or two issues that I would just raise with that, one is that I think as the Dash 1 amendment talked about limiting that to cities above 5,000, we would appreciate that for there are 175 cities with populations below 5,000, and the average that they receive in gas tax funds in a year is in the $50,000 range. So it's a lot of reporting for a lot of smaller communities, and that's about 10% of the total is received by those communities. So, you know, that was one thing that we would appreciate your consideration of. And I think it would be our intent, if that was adopted, to work to sample some of the smaller communities so that we could report in aggregate on the expenditures of the smaller communities, but we wouldn't have to just do an inordinate amount of work in recording to produce a small percentage of what are actually the expenditures are made on. The second is a comment that I received today and hadn't thought of before but made a lot of sense, which in terms of the reporting requirements and changing the categories in the beginning, that would be a useful thing to start at the beginning of a fiscal year, like the next fiscal year, because budgets are being adopted with particular categorizations. So it's sort of hard to change that in midstream. So that was just one other suggestion. And then the third was, you've heard me on the other issue of the commingling. So I think I've said enough there. And with that, thank you for looking.
So you say that if the bill moves, you'd like to offer an amendment?
I think you have the dash ones in the 5,000 cities, and we'd appreciate that. And the second would be just an effective date, at least for the reporting of beginning of the next fiscal year, so that, you know, implementing that, and if you move the bill, I'd be happy to, you know, try to work with the other side in doing that amendment, as you know, right?
Okay, because I don't see a date.
There isn't a date, but the bill would become effective on 90 days after passage.
Okay.
So that would be just a concern, and that's one that someone made me aware of yesterday, and I wish I was smart enough to have figured out before.
And then what was the third one?
The third one was the plumbing onion. You've heard me on that one, I think, is just an issue.
Madam Chairman, the issue of commingling was discussed in the outer report, and that was attached to Mr. Penhall's testimony in the AOC document. The issue of expenditure identification is also included in the audit document on page previous to the session that was copied and attached to the testimony by Mr. Penwell, and it says under the summary of recommendations B, the ORS requires that cities set aside state highway fund monies in a separate street fund. Generally, we found cities in our sample accounted for the state highway fund monies. In the general road fund, along with other monies in place of a unique state tax street fund. The general road fund is used to pay for costs associated with road street improvements. However, our review of disbursements by the cities and counties indicated two instances where the cost could have been unallowable use of state highway fund money. These instances were in the use of commingled monies for the construction of an office building for the partial use by Oregon Department of Transportation and the purchase of Christmas tree lights from an immaterial account discussed in the compliance with laws and regulations section of the report titled Oregon Department of Transportation Local Agencies Use of Highway Funds. To ensure compliance with constitutional and statutory requirements for the expenditure of state highway fund money, cities and counties should modify, if necessary, their chart of accounts or provide specific identification of state highway fund expenditures. The modification of the chart of accounts will permit specific identification of which money, which state highway funds, grants, property taxes, etc., are used to pay for roads and street costs. This will also permit a review by independent parties of city or county expenditures for street and road programs were in compliance with constitutional and statutory requirements. In addition, consideration should be given to requiring an annual certification to be prepared by city or county personnel. This certification will attest that the city or county has complied with the constitutional and statutory requirements for the expenditures of state highway fund money. The certification will be filed with the Oregon Department of Transportation. So what I guess we're asking for simply is implementation of the recommendations of the Secretary of State. It identifies the fact that there is no way currently to ensure compliance with the Constitution and statutory requirements for the expenditure of state highway. And I guess if the folks from AOC are going to use the audit to support their position, they ought to use the whole document.
Okay. Do you want to respond,
then
we're going to just work. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, there were some very valid issues raised in this audit, and I think there is a responsibility of cities and counties to provide information to the legislature, the reportability, the accountability, certification, if that is appropriate. We feel that certification now comes in the form of annual audits, the independent audits that are done by certified public accountants and filed with the Secretary of State's office and reviewed for comments by the Secretary of State's office. We don't want to duck the interest in having cities and counties report to the legislature. And I would just ask if the information that we're providing now that talks about the various kinds of receipts that we have and the various types of expenditures is the kind of information that the legislature is looking for. We're trying to provide this information to you without what we feel is unnecessary additional cost. We want to work with you. We want to provide you this information. I think we're as accountable for the expenditure of these monies as ODOT is for their share of the money.
Right.
So we want to, we feel that this kind of reporting provides that information along with the review by the auditors annually and the reports that they submit to the Secretary of State's office that these funds in 99% of the cases are being expended appropriately.
Well, Secretary is right. It was that part of the report that prompted us to comply with the recommendations of the audit.
And Madam Chairman, you recommended, according to the Secretary of State, a simple modification to the chart of accounts. Is that a completely new accounting fund or a completely new accounting fund?
Right, and this doesn't call for a new tax accounting system. And it may be the people, and they came up with these $38,000 amounts. That's the shade.
But it doesn't indicate that the commingling of monies is the cause of any problem. It says that the commingling of monies for road and street programs makes good business sense and that the auditor recommends the commingling of monies for road and street programs be formally recognized as good business practice and that this could be accomplished by a revision of our statutes by the legislature or by an attorney general's opinion.
I think the Senator is absolutely right. It's clearly not commingling that's the problem. The lack of a chart of accounts indicating where the expenditures are made. And I think we ought to try and solve the commingling problem to the county committee as well.
For the chart of accounts.
Well, the chart of accounts issue is the, I think the issue in front of us is how to track the dollars to the ground, and the Secretary of State thought it was clear on the mechanism to fix the problem. Just as clear as it is about the commingling issue not being a problem, that we should make a statutory accommodation for the allowance of commingling.
Okay, we could amend the bill later for that, but this, sure. And maybe that's the problem because of the term. Right. This would not prevent the commingling, but it would later, if you just say where they commingled, where they wrote the check, where it was sent to. Okay.
I'm concerned about the cost that we're, this is an unfunded mandate pretty much for the local governments here. And I'm concerned that if we're going to require them to do this, that we provide some funding to help them do this. Because otherwise, you know, they have a long list of unmet needs right now that they can't address because they don't have the money. And then we're going to ask them to take those limited funds and come up with more, you know, another kind of report. And I think if it's information that we require from them, then I think that we should help pay for part of this, or at least part of it. I'm very concerned about us placing this mandate on these local governments right now when they're so strapped for funds because they're all the road projects and transportation needs they have in our communities across the state. So that's my concern about doing this. If we want to help them naturally, then that's great, but I think until we really help them with their transportation needs, I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, you could require no more audits because they have to prepare for them. Go ahead.
Madam Chairman, the additional accounting would be covered under the issue of administration, which is acceptable expenditure for accounting for the highway tax dollars that are spent. So the tremendous increase in gas tax dollars over the past decade certainly provides enough money to do the administration to add an additional item to the chart of accounts.
Madam Chair, I also this morning on the way down here stopped and filled my pickup at a location in your district, and I paid an additional local tax. And I can assure you, as bad as farming business was, I paid about $10 in taxes when I filled that truck. And that was definitely an unfunded mandate for me because I put it on a credit card. And I want to know where that money went that I just paid $10 in order to drive back and forth from Capitol. And I think every citizen who reaches into their pocketbook and takes out $10 every time they pull their car, or a trucker who may be paying $16,000 a year, would like to know that our money is being appropriately spent. So we at least know where it went, if not any more than whether it's appropriately spent as they may feel about it.
Why hire the auditor if you don't follow the recommendations?
But Madam Chair, if I remember in this audit, they did not find that cities and counties were misusing funds.
Mm-hmm.
Nowhere in that audit does it say that they were found to be breaking any laws or misusing funds in those audits. And so
you know, if that were the case, absolutely, then we ought, you know, we've got to follow up on that. But they don't, in that audit, it doesn't say that. And not only that, what concerns me about this is that, you know, to me, this is another step that we're taking. It's very superficial to make Oregonians think that, boy, you know, we're going to do something about to help make sure that every cent of those of your tax dollars is going to get you a better transportation system, when what we need is more funding for our transportation system to help all of the needs across our state. And this is just, you know, this is just another one of those phony things that we're going to do and say, oh, hey, we're being more accountable. And it's really not going to lead to any more information to help us make decisions about our transportation needs in our state.
Okay.
Another one of those bad policy decisions.
Well, I just want to say, a kind of basic different philosophy. Some people say just give the problem more money. Some people say let's see if we can do it better. There was nothing in the audit report that said, what they said was, because of the way they do it, we really can't tell. They're going to say they did anything wrong because we can't tell. It's their recommendation on this part. And I just think, go ahead. They're waiting for us another. I'm going to do a 5-minute recess because we have to go over there and vote and to kick out a bill. Go ahead.
I would defend the Secretary of State when the Secretary of State thought, and I don't think he makes any recommendations.
Right. Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1324, and we're going to have a 5-minute recess while some of us run out of committee and go to vote. Okay, we're going to go back to where we were. Close it for right now. It's recess. Yeah. Turn it off. And we will talk about these amendments, but I just want to ask the accountants that if we accept these amendments, are we still talking
$38,000
and $20,000? May I just state the amendments? Yes. Okay. The amendments, do you have the bill in front of you? First off, it would be to no city over $5,000. And only under $5,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then on line 24, it would read, for the purposes of subsection 1, subsection 2, so it means just those things listed up there, each county shall account for monies paid to the county that are separately from any other county money. And for anybody listening on the internet, the reason I said that is because it listed some ORSs. But it would say, okay, for the purposes of this, tracking the money in administration, bicycle paths, construction, expansion,
mm-hmm.
operation, all that. Okay, now have we lowered the big expense?
I think so.
I
doubt if the hardship would be quite as I described earlier.
Good. And the opposition wouldn't be as strong?
Certainly.
Well, this is reasonable.
This is reasonable.
Okay.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Another thing that might be considered on line 25, the shipment to the lab,
yes.
county mm-hmm. monies, just from any other monies, because there are federal dollars there too. Or is that dealt with?
Well, what did you want to add?
I was going to take out the word county monies, and just it would be from any other monies. So strike the word county.
Well, it wouldn't be in the county if it wasn't.
Operationally, it wouldn't change.
It would
just make reference to the ORS.
Certainly.
It doesn't make much difference either way, does it? If you still work, does it?
No,
it's
okay. All right. Okay, and then, excuse me, but on page 2, on line 15, that it would read, for the purposes of section 2, subsection. No, it would say the same, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for the purposes of section 1, section 2, each city shall.
No. Section two, subsection.
I was. Yeah. Right.
First time, Madam Chair.
You can say, oh, it's
parallel construction for.
Okay. All right. Okay. For the purposes of section two, subsection two, each city shall establish. Okay. And I didn't mention one thing. With this conceptual amendment, we delete on line four. We delete establish an accounting system that, and then it account and then delete the F. And I can see that those words is what are what was giving you heartburn.
Mm-hmm.
But establish an accounting system, right? That's what's the big a new cost accounting system.
Correct.
Okay, so we're going to delete establish an accounting system that, and then the F on the end of account. So it says each county shall account for money. Okay, is that all right with Wayne County too?
Okay. Madam Chair, do you think Lane County will be okay under this? They will not have the big expenses? Okay, so are you guys just saying that this isn't as horrible as it was, or are you saying you support this bill?
Madam Chair, the only appropriate answer to that is yes.
Thank you, Senator Ferriam.
A lot of the evil is gone, Senator.
Oh, good. Okay.
Okay. Okay, that's so good. What were you going to say, sir?
This week, Lane County can turn.
Is it acceptable?
Yeah.
Okay. You can still lay.
For the record.
Chip. Whatever it was.
Chip seal, yes.
You can still chip seal.
Maintenance is important to us.
Okay, thank you. Okay, then I'm going to.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. A date. First, you wanted a date.
Mm-hmm.
You said the next. Begin. Or how about line 20? So it shall make an annual report beginning.
For fiscal years on and after July 1, 2000.
Is that right? Is that right, what you want?
Right. Fiscal years beginning on and after 2000.
Beginning on and after July 1st, 2000.
Right. Okay, say that report beginning.
Well, what I would say, Madam Chair, is that this act takes effect for fiscal year, expect for fiscal years beginning on or after July 1st, 2000.
And would that be a new section?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Again, did you hit the right button? I don't have to. All right. Beginning on.
And after.
And after.
July 1, 2000.
Okay. All right. All right. Okay, now then I'm going to, okay, we're in public hearing. Do you have something else to add? We're going to go to work session.
Madam Chair, just to remember the dash one.
All right. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1324 and open a work session on Senate Bill 1324.
Move suspension of the rules for a conceptual amendment, Madam Chair.
Okay, I move suspension of the Senator Ferrioli has moved suspension of the rules for a conceptual amendment. Conceptual. Okay. Is there any objection? We did it. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. A conceptual amendment to Senate Bill 1324 on 24, page 1. For the purposes of section 2, sub 2, each.
Yes, yeah, section 1. That's that one
here. For the purposes of section 1, subsection 2. And then line 25 would be each county under ORS 366.524, 336.54, separately from any other county money.
And are deleting establish an accounting system act.
Yes, ma'am, and the F.
Okay. Should we just do these as we go, or do you want all in one?
We can do it all in one now.
Okay.
And then on line 20,
mm-hmm.
on or after July 1st, 2000.
Well, we're going to do a separate section for that at the end, if this takes an effect.
Okay.
And then a concurrent for the city on line 15, page 2.
Mm-hmm.
Each city shall establish.
It actually says for the purposes of section 2, sub 2.
Madam Chairman, for the purpose of section 1, sub 2.
Section 2, sub 2.
Section 2, sub 2. Each city shall account.
Okay, delete, establish an accounting system that. And delete the S, okay.
And that's a chunk from my conceptual amendments.
And would you, didn't you mean to add another section that this begins on and after July 1,
2000? And on the page 1, line 2, on or and after July 1, 2000, the Association of Oregon County shall.
On page 1.
Line 20.
Line 20.
Section 3.
Section 3.
On and after July 1st, 2000.
You can put it right there. Okay, then you're going to have to add it to cities.
And then on page 2,
mm-hmm.
line 11,
mm-hmm.
on and after July 1st, 2000, the lead.
Okay. Is that okay? We made a mistake?
Mm-hmm.
We did. Okay. All right. Then we all heard that the these conceptual amendments. Is there any objection? Hearing none. Okay, and then there's a dash one amendment. Do you want to move it up?
Madam Chair, I move dash one amendments to Senate Bill 1324 to the conceptually amended draft of Senate Bill 1324.
Okay, is there any objection? Hearing none.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 1324 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
We did. Is there any objection? I mean, is there any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
And would you like to hear the bill?
Are you directing that question to me again?
Okay. Okay. And will carry the bill.
Madam Chair, can I just say I want to thank you for working out that funding part of this for the counties and the cities. That was great. Thanks.
You're welcome. Well, don't leave yet. This is our last slide.
Thank you very much.
Okay, this was the work session and work session on Senate Bill, was it 1324? Okay, and now I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2688. And I don't have that bill with me, do you?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, yes, I do. Okay, go ahead.
Members of the County Council, for 2688, in the form you stated in the State Committee on Transportation Spending, that sums up December 31st, 2000. But we have, there's an amendment that will replace the entire bill that will look fairly familiar to you as it is in the Bill 1284A, which the committee passed out. And that creates the Legislative Committee on Transportation as a joint committee of Legislative Assembly and gives them the oversight and review role.
And we passed this bill out. I do want you to know that I went with, talked on the floor with Senator Duke, because this is kind of a Senator Duke, Senator Shannon, Senator Kate Brown bill. And the House put together an interim one. We put together one. And we're going to work it out in conference committee who stays. And that's what it's for. We don't have to pass ours over there and all that stuff. So, is it dash one amendment?
It's dash three.
Okay. Senator George, you want to move to, oh wait, you have to go, oh, I am in the work.
Yeah, good work, sir.
Yeah, okay.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move the dash three amendments to House Bill 2680, Roselle State 3942, I-2199.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, they're adopted.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2680A as amended to the floor with a new pass.
Is there any discussion? The clerk will call the vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. If there's a majority, it goes to the floor with a new pass, then we'll carry it. Okay, and that closes the work session on House Bill 2680A. And, okay,
Now I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2491A. Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2491A requires the Department of Transportation to establish two safety corridors as pilots for doubling of traffic signs. There's also an amendment attached to this bill that will look fairly familiar to you, as it is Senate Bill 687, which is the bill that was passed by the committee unanimously, that defines school zones for the purpose of the motor vehicle code and defines when children are present, more specifically.
And I, let's see, Bruce Hoffman, State Police, do you want to come forward? John Gardner? Granger? What is it, Gardner? Terry, or Terry Thompson, he'll probably be down here.
Terry Thompson is out.
Oh, is it? Oh, I see. Oh, the consistent. Terry Thompson. And Yvonne Reese? I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
Terry.
I know.
Oh, did they replace?
Yeah, didn't we pass that? Okay.
Hey, go ahead. Thank you. Welcome, and I'm sorry you'd wait for
one.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Gardner. I'm a staff person for Representative Thompson. He's in Newport attending the services for former Representative Gordon McPherson. So he regrets he's not able to be here. I brought a letter along from Representative Thompson, and this is in response to a long-standing problem on Highway 18, and it's an experimental program hoping to do something to slow people down. And as for the need, this is Mickey Reeves. She's the chairperson for the Highway 18 Safety Committee, and so it's Bruce Hoffman.
Good, Bruce. Oh, there's eyes. All right, okay.
And this is Mr. Cantulis, who lost his wife in one of the accidents there. So they would like to address me. I represent my children also.
Go ahead. Either one of you start. Yeah. If you want to read, Terry Thompson, first. Okay.
Well,
I see Terry in the hall. We do have a letter from Terry Thompson for the record. Okay, go ahead.
I've never done this before, so you have to excuse me. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Yvonne Reese, and I represent a group of people called the Citizens Highway 1822 Safety Committee. And I just want to tell you a little bit of the reason why I wanted House Bill 2491 to pass. And Highways 18 and 22 are among the deadliest in the state of Oregon. Our accident rate is low, but our fatalities have risen. Our safety corridor is only 19 miles long, but our emergency crews here in Sherrod have responded to 4 fatalities already this year. Willow Minor have responded to 4 already this year also. We as a group are hoping that when House Bill 2491 passes, people will drive more cautiously when they see the red flags and signs that say, this is a safety corridor, please drive with your lights on. Highway 18 is the most popular highway to get to the coast. Isn't there some way to make it the safest way to the coast also? I would prefer not to have the Yamhill County Sheriff's deputy come to my door and say, we are sorry, but your son and his family were killed on the highway today. If you can come up with something different, then this bill would help us great. But if you cannot, please have House Bill 2491. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, you want to go ahead?
I just want to, I don't have anything prepared. I think this is one step that could help. I think it's a combination with these highways that the Oregon economy was not doing very well, and this highway is saturated, as the police are saying, and the funds for highways to be corrected or improved, and with police being out there is always about 10 years behind, and that's what we're in effect of right now. It's at an emergency state. And it's just too slow for other processes, to happen with budgeting and things being studied. This is one way that things could be maybe improved very quickly. It would not be something that would not be an improvement. It would be a definite improvement rather than a roll of the dice hoping it'll do good. Thank you.
Thank you. I was going to ask you, is this the part where it goes, you know, like three lanes and then down to one because of these little narrow bridges? That's not this part. Okay.
This is the entire safety corridor. It's 19 miles.
Uh-huh.
Of the safety corridor. But Highway 18 is 37 miles long, I think is what it is.
Okay.
And his accidents aren't going all through there.
Did you have a comment, Senator?
Yes, I sure did. Do we have any assurance, because it says that the Department of Transportation will choose the corridor that's currently 24. Do we know that 18 and 22 are going to be designated?
Do you have any assurance that they're going to be designated?
Yeah, because
they already are.
No. They're going to choose 2 out of 24 existing safe corridors.
Uh-huh.
Have you folks been assured that one or two of those quarters are going to be 1822?
Senator George, that was kind of the intent that I think maybe Doug Kendall could speak to that, even though they're not specified in the bill. It was kind of understood that the Highway 18 safety corridor would definitely be one of the two demonstration projects. If this works, then perhaps use it elsewhere. If not, then it sunsets in 2 years. Mm-hmm. So it's a test.
Okay. Well, because we're addressing this as if it was specific to that corridor, and it just says that 2 out of 24.
Chair Shannon, members of the committee, Doug Kendall, will make an official Oregon Department of Transportation. Senator, when we work with Representative Thompson on the Still River side, and what we wanted the flexibility of picking two that had come into being at different times, as this is a pilot project, so we could see does it have a demonstrable difference. That we did commit to Representative Thompson to do this on the Highway 1822 corridor.
We did commit.
That will be one of the pilot programs will be on the 1822 corridor.
That's what I want to get on the record.
Any questions? Did we need to hear from President Thompson today?
Well, I just think it's important to note that this is already a designated safety corridor, and since its designation, there have been over 30 fatalities in the last 3 years. Something needs to be done.
Did you how many fatalities?
Over 30.
The second piece of paper that you have, Madam Chair,
yes.
Is 37 people that have died on that highway since 1994. And in the last, since 1996, when the fifth corridor was put up, we had over 30 people die still in that area.
It needs more than a designation.
Yes,
it needs more than a light rail.
Yes. It needs a whole lot more than what rail needs.
Yes, it needs a whole lot more. That's what I'm saying.
We have this layout from our newspaper.
Yes.
And it shows all the deaths, the years, the days, and the ages, and that's what you guys have.
Mm-hmm. In a five-year period.
Since 1988, we've lost over 70.
1988, we've lost 70.
Yes.
And all we can do is designate a safety corridor, yes.
I guess I'd like to ask the Lieutenant of the Oregon State Police if there's a causal pattern, causal factor that is down.
Sure. Can you come up my talk first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Bruce Austin. I'm the Sergeant Patrol Services Division of the Oregon State Police. Did you want me to testify at this time or respond to the question? Okay.
Well, just fine then, respond. Is that all right?
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay.
Okay. I'm appearing today in support of House Bill 2491A, and I have prepared written testimony here, which I will provide to you that you can read at your leisure. But suffice to say that they please support anything that can be done to increase driver awareness in these areas that have already been shown to be hazardous areas. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chairman, just to ask if there's any sort of common causality that can be connected with the type of accident.
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, for the Highway 18 corridor, there seems to be a pattern there that it's head-on collisions. What the reasons are varies from one crash to another. Sometimes it's the age of the driver, sometimes it's intoxication, but for whatever reason, there are a number of cross streets in there. There's some engineering fixes that have been looked at, that type of thing. Probably the ODOT engineers would be in a better position to answer that question.
That in turn is weather a factor.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, weather oftentimes is a factor. In that particular location, I mean, it rained a lot, but it's not like we've had a lot of snow during that period or something, or ice that would create the problem. Whereas in some of the others where you're talking foothills, that would be more of a factor.
Thank you.
Just a long question.
Okay.
It's not potholes, so they're well-maintained, aren't they?
Smooth,
isn't it?
Yeah. Madam Chair, as far as I'm aware. Yeah.
It's dangerous. Mm-hmm.
Very, very smooth road. In fact, and I drive this road constantly, and I can tell you, it used to be an absolute pleasure to drive this, and it's absolute terror to drive it today. One of the things I think everyone needs to know about this is the fact that that road, if you follow it from Highway 5 to the coast, you're going to find some really fascinating things. For example, if you were coming from Portland, which is a lot of the people who head to the casinos, you'd come from Portland, and you were going to come through Newburgh Dundee, you would find yourself presently on a four-lane, soon-to-be five-lane highway. It goes to a two-lane, it then goes to a two-lane to a four-lane, and then goes back to a three-lane, and there's been a substantial number of accidents that have occurred, and we just recently got it marked off a double yellow line that you can't pass in there, because what would happen is people would be three-lane headed west, and somebody would exercise their right, and they would pull out and take the westbound traffic with an eastbound car. It's really a tragedy. The issue, if you watch the road, I've driven it, of course, substantially and flown it and looked at it, and one of the things you notice right away that the primary problem is the fact of a road that varies constantly. One question I would have, though, for the officer is that within the 24 quarters, safety quarters, that designation requires heightened police scrutiny. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator George, that is certainly part of our tactical plan. And when those areas are designated, when they're identified as being problem areas, then when the local stations work on their tactical plans for enforcement, that would certainly be one of the priorities for that area.
Okay, one of the things I've noticed, if there's any officers present, whether it's Yamhill Polk or State Police present, there's nobody going over 55. They're all right on it. But as soon as there isn't presence of police officers, the speed is right back up again. So you're going to have an officer present to catch him under this thing. But right now, anything that would help. I mean, it took us so many years to get two lanes painted down so they eliminate that. The sad part is that we have rock quarries within a mile of this road. We have a right-of-way that we own. These roads should be fixed and should be improved. We have unbelievable traffic increases because of the casinos. And, it's time to... This is a temporary nicety, but the main thing is we need to get to additional capacity.
When you say we own, you mean we own the right-of-way.
We own the right-of-way.
Get in there and
write it.
Okay. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I understand that. I just want to follow up on what Senator George said about when officers are present that people do slow down on that road. And I thought that wasn't there funding given to the local county there to have a patrol, either a sheriff's deputy or some kind of a increased presence of law enforcement, and then the money, and then somehow it wasn't used for that person anymore or something? Can you talk about that at all?
Madam Chair, Senator Castillo, I know that there is a grant currently that's administered through ODOT, and it's a tri-county operation between the state police, Yamhill County, and Polk County, to provide additional funding for that area, and that would be above and beyond the other NHTSA pass-through grants that we use for enforcement purposes. As far as an officer that was hired specifically to work that area, I'm not aware of that.
The money came back. I remember they reappropriated. You're right, it left. I think it
was. So was it used for what it was? I mean, so then it was used to help with the beating there for a while, or I guess I'm not very clear on what happened with that grant.
I'm sure Senator Castillo, the grant that I'm talking about has only been in effect for probably about the last 2-3 months.
Oh, okay.
So it's just started out and it's currently ongoing.
Okay.
Senator, I think I can clarify.
Okay.
ODOT said there would have been more if they didn't reapply. That Polk County had let Polk County lapse, and then when all this happened earlier this session, that's the 2 months, I think it came back. Okay. Anyway, okay? Thank you. All right, now, I for you, if that's okay, thank you.
I just want to say thank you to the folks who are here working on this problem, and I wanted to thank you, sir, for being here, and just to say that we're very sorry about your loss. And
thank you. There's a lot of people out there representing. I'd also like to add that part of the problem also is Highway 18 and 22, when they're divided, before they joined, they've had a lot of fatalities. And then you get a stretch of road that those two roads that are both dangerous are overlapping, and they are down to two lanes on part of that. And when you do that, when that happens on a highway, people get more anxious, and that's you asked about weather. The anxiousness is what, especially if the sun is shining, people, the anxiousness comes out. In regards to Senator PR.
Very early.
You asked about weather. That actually, the amount of incidents goes down because people are more aware of the dangers with bad weather. As living on, well, I lived just past the casino when I grew up in Sheridan. As living in that area all my life, I've seen the traffic incidents go down as the weather gets bad. And then when the sun comes out, also, you have a lot more saturation, a lot more traffic on the road, and that's what I think adds to it, is a lot of it is the amount of cars and then the frustration and anxiousness that people have behind the wheel.
Okay, I'm ready to meet this bill.
Well, just now, I tell you about these amendments. Thank you. The -1 amendment, -3 amendment, if you look, it's a bill we already passed out. And what happened, remember that the lady from Lebanon came, and she's the head of statewide safety, and she said there's been confusion because it says when children are present, and there's not a real clear definition of when children. Is it on the sidewalk? Is it in the middle of the playground? And so the bill in the House got all loved death. And so if that survives, we need to stuff it in this today. And so that's what we're doing. We've already debated that whole thing and amended it. So if somebody wants, I'll move the -3 amendment.
Are we in work session?
Yeah, we are. Aren't we?
No.
Okay, then I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2491A and open a work session on House Bill 2491A. And I'm going to move the -3 amendment to House Bill 2491A. Is there any objection? So moved. And I'll move House Bill 2491A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Very quickly, what was said needs to be in mind. When Highway 18 and 22 come together, you have 6 lanes between the two of them who's going to 2 before it goes to 3. It's just an amazing set of circumstances that led to 6 to 2 and back to 3.
From Portland to Salem, right there, and that's the death trap, right? Right. And so, and people are getting frustrated. So, okay, then we are going to, I moved it, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is there no more discussion? The clerk will take the roll. If there's no more discussion.
Aye.
Aye. I have received a unanimous vote. House Bill 2491A, as amended, goes to the floor, and with a due pass recommendation, I say that anyway. Senator George, would you carry the bill?
Please,
okay.
No, Chair, I would also like to thank the
safety
committee and the folks that cared enough to come and bring the bill before this.
That's right. Thank you. And close the work session on House Bill 2491A. And let's see, I do see, look at Senator, you leave when you have to. Oh, and I will close the work session. I'm a little nervous because you're going to leave anyway on House Bill 2491A.
I'm going to go to the Thurston event tonight and bring I'm going to leave here pretty soon.
Well, there's two things that we needed to actually hear. And I want you to hear the House Bill 2203A, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2203A. And who's Don Amon and Art Llewellyn? Are you still here? Okay. Okay, go ahead. And tell us about the bill.
Oh, House Bill 2203, we heard last week, authorizes the Department of Transportation to count federal funds and certain state highway funds money to modernization toward amount required to state modernization program for highways. We have a dash one amendment that require any additional federal funds that become available to ODOT as a first priority to be used for modernization projects that are ready to be put out to bid.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Joan Plank with Department of Transportation. The bill with the amendment, we worked out the amendment and would be happy to have it passed with that. I believe it's the dash one amendment.
You have the dash one?
I've seen it. I don't have it.
Okay.
But I get read it.
Okay.
That sounds an awful lot like 757.
Okay.
Madam Chair, let me have Don Amon explain what the amendment does.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Don Amon, Funds and Grants Manager for ODOT. The amendment would give, because we're really talking about short-term financing, what it does is allows a project already in our current highway program to move forward, and it would give preference to a modernization project when the end of the year fund management stuff allows some additional federal funds to come into the department. We would first put that on MOD, pending MOD projects being available or ready to go.
Okay, I think the difference, Senator Castillo, is that in 1985, I don't think Megan said that. In 1985, the legislature said that each year we would have to spend a minimum of 2 cents of the gas tax, is that right, on modernization projects. Then in the 87 session, they increased that to 4 cents, which basically comes out to $54 million a year. And what they want to do is say that $54 million a year can be paid with federal dollars. And
oh, that's right. Okay, I remember this bill.
Okay.
We had this bill here. Okay.
And, but my concern was if we replace it with federal dollars, then, but if it, in your best estimate, that federal money right now will probably not ever be more than 2 to 8 million.
It would be a real high figure, to the 2 to 4.
Two to four million. So, and my concern was, it's working, the legislature has intended there would be a minimum $54 million, and because all of the millions they have, that's a small amount, comparatively, for new construction and to hopefully decrease congestion. And so then I asked, these federal dollars, if it freed up, that's what it was, if it freed up the state dollars, then that would just go to maintenance. And they said, yes, we could use it for maintenance or anything. So what this amendment says, the first priority of that freed up money is modernization. Is that right? Is that the intent of this?
Madam Chair, that would be correct. It would be the additional federal revenue that would become available at year end. We'd use it to advance then the MOD project. It would be in a subsequent year in the STIP.
Okay, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but now when I read this and I think about it, is there ever a chance when the whole $54 million could be used for federal dollars?
Madam,
the leftover, but the whole $54
million? Madam Chair, it could possibly happen. We would never do less than 54, and if the issue would be that even using that federal 50, federal funds to the full 54 amount, it would still allow you to reach that goal at year end to ensure you could maybe get additional federal funds coming in, which is the whole point of this amendment, to ensure that we can get the federal dollars to work for us faster as well as qualify for additional at year end.
Okay, if we use the 54, because it was the extra that we'd be leveraging for, that would be above the 54 federal dollars. Does this amendment say that the 54, it doesn't, that the 54 million that we originally wanted, then that would go for maintenance? So there would be no requirement that 54 million of state dollars would ever have to go for modernization.
Madam Chair, in strict terminology, that would be true. It wouldn't have to be state dollars. It's the level of funding that we're trying to get established, which we thought was the intent of the ORS originally, was that they were trying to establish a level of funding. Interpretation said it should be state funds. Now, we want to guarantee that the level of 54 would be met, but we're just trying to ensure that the dollars entrusted to ODOT are maximized to the best ability we can.
You have a question?
Mm-hmm. I'm sure. Presently, the 4 cents per year is yielding a certain amount of money based upon the fact of a certain amount of consumption. So if consumption goes up, it will go beyond 54 million. But this would, in a sense, lock it in and say it's federal dollars and only have it at 54 million.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that is not the intent of this bill. It is not intended to lock it in. In fact, we would still be obligated to establish the level of funding coming in that was derived by that 4 cents.
Mm-hmm.
And if revenue increased to the point where usage went up where the 4 cents ended up being 60 million, then that's the level we would still have to achieve. So we still have to account for what level of funding is coming in based on the 4 cents.
The reason the counting this, if I remember you correctly, counting it this way with federal dollars was it might access some additional federal dollars.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that's correct.
With 757, Senate Bill 757 would be the same mechanism to kick in to be able to achieve additional federal dollars.
Madam Chair, Senator George, I'm not sure that is correct because it's a year-end thing. If we could apply the same rule and using federal funds in 757, then yes. But the way I'm understanding 757 would...
So that's the modernization.
The modernization.
Takes $201 million federal dollars. So we would be really stepping up the plate there, not $54 million, but $201 saying we want, additional modernization.
Madam Chair, Senator George, that bill still talks about, putting federal money towards mod. We still have to meet, we have to deliver projects and obligate the federal money annually to still qualify for additional, and that's what this is intended to do.
Those projects are coming off the ship, and so it would change the mechanism, it sounds like.
Madam Chair, Senator, that's correct.
Okay,
it's getting late. That's
no, it isn't. My concern is that if gasoline goes up to 30 cents a gallon, and we still don't have an obligation of the gas tax money, it all can go to maintenance. I think that we've a little bit subverted what the 85 and 87 sessions did. That's my concern. And I also am concerned, what about the state that didn't put that in? Do they not have access to these new construction federal dollars? Do you understand what I just asked?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. We are competing with other states, and so if we don't align ourselves to use up our full available authority each year, then we won't be competing with other states. We actually put Oregon at a disadvantage. And so we're trying to put ourselves at the advantage where we can at least compete with other states in securing some additional ceiling to get the federal dollars that are...
Okay, I guess what I need to ask you is a different way. If you left the $54 million there, just whole. And then all the rest, the governor says, no more modernization. I imagine this came about because the governor said, that's it, no more modernization. What if we use some of this, the balance? I don't know right now what the total is that comes in, but let's just say it's a billion or 750,000. And on that, or say 750,000. of that 750,000, only 50 million, of that 750 million, only 54 million has to go to modernization. Why do you have to attach your wagon to that? Why can't you do the leveraging with all the other?
Madam Chair, because the other, most of the other programs is, that are state funded do not qualify for federal aid. Even our maintenance activities are not federally aid eligible.
That's what I'm saying. If they would allow a little modernization with the rest and real life, look at you, double this, you would leverage it. Why do we have to take our minimum? Why do you have to focus on those? And what about Washington State, where they don't have a minimum? What about California? They don't, is the competition only in the states that have a 4 cent minimum has to be on new construction? Why do you have to attach to that?
Madam Chair, we only attach to that because it's the one area in our STIF that doesn't qualify.
It does not qualify?
Well, we can't use it to help meet the goal. Because it has to be state funds. And so we, to ensure that we abide by the statute, we make sure that our state funds are there. And so it takes that section of our program out of being able to use it to compete, and use to reach our federal limitations.
You have to understand that I really want to help you. I really want to do this. But I do not want to reach any commitment that we have made that at least 4 cents of the gas tax dollar or the gas tax collection each year must go to relieve congestion.
Madam Chair, I can assure you that this bill and the amendment does nothing to take away from the 54, and with the amendment it would actually allow us to, by giving modernization the priority, it would allow modernization work to begin earlier and start spending dollars toward modernization quicker for the projects we have in our SIP.
Okay, it would go because then the 4 cents that's sacred for new construction would then go to maintenance, and that would be filled in with federal dollars.
Madam Chair, no. What we're doing is we basically have a SIP full of projects that's a certain level, and let's say it's 300. And part of that 300 is 54 million of mod. If I take and use federal funds on that 54 million, I've left some projects that were now scheduled for federal, which would be late in the year, or maybe one that's slipping, it still has to get funded. And so the state funds that were then freed up would still go towards those SIP projects that are already approved in the current SIP.
Hmm.
It's just more,
SIP modernization projects.
SIP projects in general.
Right, and that's where the maintenance comes in.
I'm sure there is no maintenance project in our SDIF. They're all capital construction projects.
Aren't they bike paths?
Madam Chair, there would be bike paths, but...
It's $54 million. Does that go to bike paths now?
Madam Chair, the only piece of the 54 that goes is the bike paths that are incorporated into a brand-new project that would be monitored.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, let me put this, if I could, in terms of how a farmer would look at this. The reason we want to move this over and put it so that it does show as being accounted for on the federal side is the fact that when the federal government looks at our budget and they say you're getting 5% to new construction, I would imagine that they would say, well, we're not giving you any more money until you get additional money into new construction. Well, we don't intend to take this 54 million, 108 million. So what we're having to do to satisfy and ensure the pressure from them or to avail ourselves the money that they won't give us because we're not building it for 5%, we've now got to move it over there and put it there. So it's like you have a small project and you're building it over here. The feds are saying you can't access any additional because you're not doing any new capacity construction. So we just move it over here. We haven't gained a thing. It's just we might get a few more federal dollars. And to me, it is the ultimate shell game. And I think it's embarrassing that we would, I'm sure, if we had somebody from the federal government here that would tell us the truth about this, they would be saying, we look at your budget and we see you're spending 5% on new capacity construction. We're just not going to allow you to access those extra dollars. Is that a reasonable way to describe that?
Madam Chair, Senator, I would like you to help that last piece because The federal government does not, they look at our planning process, and they, what they look for in state governments is that we have a planning process in place that would lead to the projects we incorporate in our SIP. If our planning process says we need to do more modernization, then they would support what our planning process says, which the, our transportation program really is the end result of all our planning. And so as long as we have a planning process in place that takes public input and involved in the full process of what we can do for building our SIP, that's what they care about. The mix of the type of work in there is the state's call.
So I'll get you the extra dollars.
Why won't they reimburse you for maintenance then?
Maintenance
they don't care.
Madam Chair, maintenance activity is not an allowable activity under the federal program.
Modernization is.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
And what else?
Madam Chair, preservation, bridge rehabilitation, bridge replacement.
Then why can't you do it with the bridge money?
Madam Chair, our construction program is fully federalized, and there is no other state part of our program other than the modernization to help meet this goal to use the full federal.
You mean there's not even state tax dollars going to bridge improvement? That's all federal?
Madam Chair, that is correct. The monies available to the construction program are basically the federal program. Most of the state dollars are in our project development and right-of-way acquisition, which are an earlier phase of our construction projects.
And nothing from the state gas tax and fund is going for tunnels? That's all federal dollars?
Madam Chair, of course, there's very few tunnels, but the tunnels, too, would be, as long as it's a capital construction project, right now with our current SIP would be federal dollars.
We're not even spending any of us. All the money that we bring in from gas tax and registration besides running the agency and doing the grants for land use planning, all of it is going for maintenance. The preservation is coming out of federal dollars for bridges and tunnels.
Madam Chair, in the construction program, that's correct. Again, the full piece of our construction program really is our project development, right-of-way acquisition, and construction. And it's more efficient. It's just and the best way to use your money. We can deliver our projects faster using state funds in the development or the earlier phases and keeping the federal funds in construction. It's more of an efficient way to manage your money, and that's what we're looking for in the money management part.
Does the governor know that if he would put more money in new construction, you could leverage more federal dollars? So you wouldn't have to go after this $54 million?
Madam Chair, again, it's not an issue of more modernization that helps us leverage it. It's the issue of what's in our SIP that we can use to advance work.
Okay, let me say it another way. If we didn't have this law, what would be holding you back? And if everything that we had, everything was going for preservation, maintenance, and all that, then you just couldn't leverage. Is that right? It's because people in 85 and 87 protected this money that you're able to leverage?
Madam Chair, no, that's not correct.
Okay.
The only issue on leveraging is to have projects ready that can be federalized. Most of our modernization projects could be federalized, but because it is dedicated, we have to meet the state's funding goal. We just can't use them to leverage. But any other type of project, because it doesn't have the mandate on it, that's when then we can use them.
Okay, then is it because the Oregon do it because the federal government wanted us to set aside so this money could be leveraged? I'm thinking, like, what about Colorado? They don't have this. How do they leverage for federal dollars? They don't have this.
Madam Chair, it's not an issue of having the mod program to leverage. Colorado would compete as well. If they have projects that they can advance, then those projects that can be advanced, they use those to leverage. ODOT can also leverage it by having projects to advance, by including the modernization in that scope of what's available. We just make that stuff, the amount we can leverage even greater. The federal program, when they actually look at us, they look at how much funds you have on your books that could contribute to this increase. They also look at how much you can request that your need is. And so the bigger you build your request, the more you can compete for additional to make great.
Okay, what's the barrier that's keeping you from requesting, because I'm sure $54 million isn't all that's going in construction, what's the barrier in steps that's keeping you from doing projects beyond that $54
million? Madam Chair, there isn't, and it just makes it bigger. Well, we can, it helps us compete. And it also lets us, as for an example, if a modernization project was ready in the first quarter of the year, right now, we wouldn't put any federal funds on it. If we could federalize that mod job, we could actually then start getting the federal bucks coming in earlier and quicker for us, which to me is just money management.
Why do you, I mean, there's nothing to prevent you from federalizing any job. Any mod job, you could federalize it. Why do you have to touch the protected?
Well, Madam Chair, there is no more in there than that. If there were other mod jobs in there, then that would be true.
Thank you. If the governor would allow other mod jobs, you could leverage that money, right?
That is about worth it.
Okay, go ahead.
I think you and I just went from being called the orgy of road building to the mod squad. So, Madam Chair, I think we need to look at these numbers really seriously because, I mean, we have 600, according to the bubble chart, we have 661 million federal dollars coming in here. This is 8.3% of that, is all we're talking about. When I asked for how much of this 661 million could actually go for highways, I was told it was 564 million something. And so what I want to know is, out of that 560 million of those federal dollars that are coming in, we're not getting anything that's capacity improvement that we qualify under the mod?
Madam Chair, Senator George, none of the federal dollars are linked to capacity. They can be used for capacity, but they're not dedicated to capacity.
Somebody doesn't have the will to link them to capacity, and if he would let up, because we could lever this money, why do we have to? Because I understand it. We let up, and then all that can go to more maintenance.
Madam Chair, the only reason I would try to give you a comfort zone on that is the fact that if we took the money that was freed up because we federalized the mod job and put into maintenance, then we'd be forcing ourselves to also then delay some of the construction jobs that were scheduled. Because if all we're doing is within a constrained amount of projects, moving, saying some are federal, some are mod, and we're just changing which ones are, but the amount of money is the same. And so if I took, and that's in our construction program. Now if I took money away and put into maintenance, I've all of a sudden took money away from my construction program and we're not doing that.
Except you told me that if the construction wasn't ready and a maintenance was, it's over.
Madam Chair, then that was a misstatement by me or a misunderstanding because maintenance are not even in our STIP. Maintenance is a separate activity funded independent of our STIP. And it has to be a capital construction project that we would use.
What did you say about if it wasn't on the shelf? You said there wasn't a competition between a mod job on the shelf and another one on the shelf that was ready to go.
Like a preservation or...
There we go. Yeah, preservation.
Mm.
Okay, did you have another?
Yes, Madam Chair, because I think it's really interesting to look at all those numbers that way. And if you take the maintenance, and you're looking at $300 million, and you look at preservation, we saw from that audit down in 97 that we were spending total on all the road projects, $361 million. And then you even just think about those numbers in relationship to just the federal dollars. That doesn't include gas tax, weight, mile, fees, or any other fees on your car, but just that, you're not even to 50%. And this just seems almost bizarre to be down here focusing on 5% of the total or 8% of the federal. It just doesn't seem even remotely.
Tell you why they're here. They are here because it's a way they can get more money. I think they're frustrated, too, that we can't do more modernization. And I think maybe I need to talk to the governor and see if we lift the equivalent of 2 cents, if he would lift the equivalent of 2 cents, so it wouldn't all have to come out of our protected fund. Because if he says it can go to preservation, so if he would leverage a lot, you know, to count, do you understand what I'm saying? Why does it all have to come from our protected account?
Madam Chair, and I agree. I mean, we all would like more mod.
Not all of us.
Well, I think we would.
ODOT would, yes.
It's a priority, you know, and that's an issue of our planning process that says where should we put our money, and I'm,
right.
You know, and I'm just trying to manage our dollars.
I know you are.
This.
I know.
Where this bill would not reduce that commitment to 54. It preserves it, and the amendment would allow us to at least get some mods that are in the state moving a little quicker. And that's basically what we're doing.
I know, but it does say no longer does 4 cents a year of the gas tax money have to go, because now we've used federal dollars for that.
Madam Chair, if the mix was right, that might be true. I guess in the financial management area, I look at our program I have to deliver, and I don't really differentiate between the state and the federal dollars. It's how I can most efficiently use those dollars to maximize what's to the state. And I know you feel like you're dedicated to the MOD program. What I feel is we're dedicated to 54 million MOD, no matter what kind of money we have to put on it.
Right. And see, if that's the frustration of us that manage, you know, the people's money, they must have, in 87 and 85, decided to not really modernize, and we're going to put a limit, at least this much, because pretty soon, you know, it goes that way. We'll just lift it because all federal dollars are doing it anyways. And then you won't be able to leverage, because not even that will be protected. There are people that don't want us to modernize. And I just feel very uncomfortable listing that. I wish you could leverage against it out of all the other millions. I mean, a leverage against just a little portion of those.
Right. Madam Chair, I appreciate where you're at. I mean, we can live with what we have. This would just help. And that's...
I know, it would help in the short run, and I can see that, but it will, I just feel like it'll get away from us.
Okay. Appreciate it.
But where are you? Do you want to move it?
No.
I would find somebody.
Well, Madam Chair, what really bothers me about this is we had ODOT in earlier before the session actually began with a bill that wanted to eliminate totally the $54 million. I keep echoing in the back of my head exactly what is happening here. I really have a feeling that when this all said and done, we're going to have less than $54 million for capacity construction going out there. And because of the fact that, you know, that was the direction of the agency and the governor, and then all of a sudden now we want to shift it over to something else, I'm really uneasy with that until I can have that absolutely spelled out to me exactly how that was going to affect everything with assurance that it was, in fact, the desire of the governor and the Transportation Commission, that they, in fact, realized we needed more capacity.
Madam Chair, can I address that? I think, Senator George, you may be remembering a list of legislative concepts, mm-hmm. something that we had at one point in time that were on the table for discussion, and the committee asked us to come in and talk about them. That particular bill did not make it through the commission nor the governor's office.
This committee just raised holy hell about it instead of over somebody's dead body. We're going to take $54 million to modernization. And you start thinking, we go out here and tell the people, we're getting 5 cents on your dollar to new capacity construction. Do you know what a town hall could do to you if you walked in and said that? I mean, they would be saying, you got 5 cents out of every dollar to some new capacity?
Yep.
Best we could do.
Madam Chair, Senator George, I very likely that the committee had influence over that issue, and the bill was not introduced, and this was what was introduced in its stead, which was to try to be able to make the best use of the dollars that we have. So,
if that bill would have passed, could you still have done this?
We wouldn't need this. If the bill to eliminate the 54 had passed, then
wouldn't be able to access those new federal dollars.
Because the governor would have said nothing for modernization. If that bill would have passed, or explained it to me.
That was not introduced.
I know, but if that concept would have, maybe this time you could have leveraged against it because it was already dedicated.
Madam Chair, it's not an issue of modernization. It's an issue of the state, a piece of our construction program that has to have state funds on it. If that bill would have said preservation, 4 cents went to preservation, I would be here looking at you with the same issue. It's not the issue of modernization at all here. It's the issue of state funds having to go against a certain program, and that's the only way you can meet the goal of the program. If you said 4 cents had to go to bridges, I would be here asking the same thing.
So you can get more money for modernization with no restrictions?
I can.
When the governor has said no more modernization. You may have gotten more from preservation or main maintenance or whatever, but really modernization, if this was listed?
Madam Chair, I would not fund anything that's not in our construction program, and if we were going to do more modernization, I could not do it unless it was in our adopted STIP, and it's gone through our process. And so everything I'm funding has to be within our approved program.
I see. If you would have gotten the first choice, though, you could have leveraged more for preservation because you approved preservation. And it would have been more money. What you're after is more money for our state. I understand your heart.
Madam Chair, I would have taken any kind of project, and if modernization would have been there, I would have used it, but right now I can't use it.
Got it. I'm just doing your job, trying to figure out ways. That's okay.
Sure.
But, and you understand where we're just afraid that the next time we're not using state dollars anyway, so let's just remove it. I see it so much clearer. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just ran the numbers really quickly, and I don't have the new chart, but the one that was for 9901. Initially, you know, we're almost $1.3 billion.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to these federal dollars of motor fuel, I just took motor fuel and weight mile. And so with that in mind, that we're not talking about this $1.3 billion, we're talking about $661. And out of that $661, not including the $1.3 billion, we're getting $54 million to modernization. Now my question is this. If in fact of that $661 million, $564 million goes someplace else of those federal dollars, where do they go?
Madam Chair, Senator Burge, those go towards, most of those all go towards preservation, they go towards safety, they go towards bridge and operations, and then there's the dedicated programs that we have no choice on to come to, which would be like your enhancement program, the congestion mitigation air quality program, or some dedicated to safety, then there's the earmark projects are also in the bill.
Those in the chart I was given, they amounted to about $96 million of the $600 million, but of the $564, it says right in the letter that I received MoDOT that one's for highways. What does it go for?
Madam Chair, Senator George, those would have been for preservation projects, they would have been for bridge replacement and rehabilitation projects, and they would have been for safety and operation projects that are in our SIP.
You add all those up and you don't even get to that number. And we haven't even talked about the $1.3 billion.
Okay, I want to close it in, but I want to say I don't want to really close the door on this in case I'm missing something. And we're going to reopen as soon as the transportation bills come over. And I'm open, if I ever could be convinced, that you absolutely can't leverage this against preservation dollars or... because we're only as safe as the next legislature that they could do it anyways. But I do want to carry on the tradition of protecting the, at least 64 cents, you know. So I'm not totally opposed, but I do want to close this hearing today. Okay? Keep working on it. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2203A, and I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2198A. And that would be it for the day. I want to hear more about who would explain the bill.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2198A allows the Department of Transportation to recover the actual costs incurred as a result of accidents involving filled or discharged cargo or as a result of violations of vehicle weight or dimension limits to persons causing a roadway accident.
Okay, and who's second? Yeah,
I think Doug was first.
Doug,
okay. Chair Shannon, members of the committee, Doug Kendall, Maintenance Engineer, Oregon Department of Transportation. Let me just tell you briefly why you need this bill. I can give you an example. If you remember, about 6 or 9 months ago, a lumber truck dumped a load of lumber on the Markham Bridge. And we spent a lot of time cleaning that lumber up so we can get the bridge open again. Right now, we can only recover costs when there are damage to the structure of the highway. So if there's no damage to the structure, we can't recover the costs of all of that cleanup that went on. The other situation that this occurs in is involves traffic control for salvage operations. The truck has tipped over. We've cleared the freeway. The truck's laying over in the ditch. We need to come back out. To pull the truck out of the ditch requires us to do traffic control, and we cannot recover costs for doing that traffic control. We'd like to privatize out that traffic control in those situations and get contractors on board, and this would allow us to recover the cost to pay those contractors.
And you can't do that already and save money?
Chair Shannon, no, we cannot do that today because we can only recover costs when there is damage to the highway or the high, or a structure on the highway, guardrail or something. So if there's no damage, we can't recover the cost of the salvage.
No, that's not my question. My question is, if you're going to have an ODOT employee directing traffic, why couldn't you have contract out for that now?
Chair Shannon, actually, we do that in some cases. But the contractors are not as – there's two things that happen. Contractors tend not to be as cheap as our own forces going out there. And secondly, it's because we can't – it becomes a bill we have to pay in addition to paying the employees out doing maintenance work. And so it takes away – if we contract something, our crew continues to work on a maintenance project, and you're paying for a separate function – as well, now you're paying for two functions at once where you were only paying for one before. It impacts that money's got to come out of our maintenance budget. I lost you.
No, you didn't. I'm just saying, I'll tell you what I'm just thinking what was through my mind was, I looked like you lost me, but what's through my mind is, how did we ever manage all these years without this and the taxes were even lower?
Sure, Shannon, we have lived without this bill. We can continue to live without this bill. It's just a way that we could recover costs when there's a responsible party. It's a bill that we almost passed last session and got to the floor of the Senate, the House bill, and got to the floor of the Senate. It got voted down because the utility company, or a small utility district, seemed to think that it was going to have us billing them when they did cuts across roadways. I don't know how they jumped to that, but they got there and it fell one vote short of passing last session.
Since you're already?
Well,
they cut across the roadway, don't they pay for that?
Chair Shannon, they don't cut across state highways very often, but I think they were concerned. There was a lot of discussion that, back then about damage to highways when you had multiple, and this is not state highways, it's city streets and county roads. City streets mostly. You had a whole bunch of cuts across, and it made it bumpy as you went down. And some people were saying that the utilities ought to be responsible for more costs because they had cut so many places in the roadway. I don't know where it came from. When a utility does work on state highway, we have specifications to try and make sure it's not bumpy. So that was never our issue. This issue had to do with traffic control and salvage when you have an accident involving cargo.
A little bit, isn't that why we pay our gas taxes to keep our roads going more?
No, I'm sure, Shannon. It's like I said, it's a policy decision.
What would go to the gas tax if we told every road to build it, everybody paid for their own cleanup? Why we should cut taxes, couldn't we?
Chair Shannon, I'd probably.
Okay, sir.
I haven't thought of that.
I'm trying to figure this one out because, you know, I own trucks, and because of that, I know what's on my insurance. And my understanding is that if I have an accident and I dump a load on a road, that I'm responsible to have that cleaned up right now and to deal with any of the hazardous cargo spill and everything else. And I'm just wondering, what does this do differently than what we're presently doing?
Have you ever collected from a truck?
Chair Shannon and Senator George, yes, in the situation with hazardous spills and if you run into a bridge and all those types of things, yes, you're responsible and we'll bill your insurance company. There are two cases. One is the case where if you dump a load of cantaloupe on the roadway, mm-hmm. there's no damage to the roadway, there's no hazardous substance. You technically, we would be out there cleaning it up, and we could not bill you for the cost of what ODOT spent out there cleaning it up. The other situation would be if your truck went off to the side of the road or on the road and we pushed it off, and now you've got a trailer over the side of the road and you need to close a lane or two lanes, maybe the whole road, to pull the trailer back out onto the road for a relatively short time. We cannot recover costs. We have to pull, right now we're pulling a crew off of another maintenance activity, bringing them in to flag the traffic. And we'd like to be able to recover the cost of doing that, because we could contract it, or we should, we just feel we should be able to recover the cost because it's a responsible party.
Ted, what really makes me nervous is how the costs are going to be calculated, because, you know, I have one little road in my area, and I've had estimates from ODOT from anywhere from $60 million to $300 million. And that makes me really nervous about how you establish costs. How under this bill will you establish the cost? Is this just a blank check that is being signed by someone saying you fill in the number?
Chair Shannon, Senator George, and I hadn't left there either. No, we would establish costs based on the same rates that we bill out to activities in the maintenance management system, which is our labor rate, standard labor rate that's loaded with the overhead of what's called other payroll expenses and our standard equipment charges that are published.
What would a person be looking at per man per unit of equipment?
Well, Chair Shannon, Senator George, and the equipment depends on which piece of equipment.
Let's say the load of cantaloupe, but it had to come from California.
Okay, so we, like a front-end loader probably bills out at, I can't remember our rates, you know, something like maybe $35 an hour. I can check on that for you. Depends on how big the loader is and all that stuff. A maintenance employee probably bills out at about around $20 an hour loaded cost.
Okay, and you can't do that today for any of that. So are you responsible to remove it?
Sure.
Chair Shannon, Senator, yes, they are, but they don't generally want to remove it as fast as we'd like to get the road reopened. So we're helping them.
Sure, yeah. Doug, I just want to say that thank you for letting us harass you. Because we really like you, and we really like your ideas, and we just think you're a wonderful ODOT employee. And sometimes we just can't see it all, but we like your spirit. And
all right.
Thank you, because I bet you better go to Dennis to sit up here and answer our questions.
And Chris Shannon, I wouldn't admit to that. I would rather be on the golf course right now.
Well, I think that I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2198A. And there is another bill, but we're not going to work it now. So I'm going to go for the business. I'm going to close the current transportation committee. Thank you. Okay.